it's pretty powerful, and, you know, I have to say...
Camelot! Camelot! Camelot!
It's only a model.
Shh! Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance where we're able. We do routines to call the scenes, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rise that are quite unsingable. We're all come back in Camelot, we sing from the die of Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37. What? I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords, is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
What is the dream? The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us, from every nation, come together and make that future a great one.
It was that ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, watch that sound. Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our sides. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop.
everybody. We all have big dreams. We all have hopes for this world, and we all have ideas and things that we'd like to see come to pass. But money can't fix this. Hunger, homelessness, sickness, environmental wars, division, corruption, and that's just a start. When you look up there and you try to see, says, why is our world so divided? And you'll hear all kinds of different stories of different people's opinions and views, why we're all divided and why we can't seem to get along. You know, even all the way to the side where you see who's convincing the world that God does not exist. Well, if the people that don't believe in a higher power or divine entity or God or a great spirit or a creator, you know, if they really are correct in what their assessment of it is, that there is no higher power, then that means that all this is on us. That means it's up to us to fix it, because, you know, we are not going to have any divine intervention. And so, whether you believe in a devil or not, whether you believe in evil or not, there's a saying out there that says the greatest trick that the devil ever pulled was to convince the world he did not exist. Which would be pretty much the same thing as if you didn't have to worry about a higher power or be held accountable. You know, it'd be like what Aleister Crowley said, do as thou wilt. You know, it's no big deal. Everything is good. You know, there's no bad, there's no good, there's no moral, it's just life. You know, some people believe that, you know, years and years and years ago, maybe millions or billions of years ago, in a primordial soup, something occurred that made this little squiggly thing that worked its way to a fish and eventually to a monkey, and then now to modern day man. It's a long story. It's a long drawn out story. It must have been one heck of a journey from start to finish to get to where we are now. But regardless of whether you believe in the Big Bang Theory or creation, as in everything spoken into existence by, you know, a divine entity, a higher power, a creator, or whatever, here we are today in the here and now, and we've got a few issues that need to be resolved. We've got a lot of things going on in this world that, you know, a lot of folks are really divided over. We got people who honestly believe that one man is responsible for all this kind of stuff, you know? You hear it all the time. It don't matter who's the president. I can remember when Obama was president, you know, it's pretty much the same mindset. But now Trump is president, and so, once again, same mindset. It's the other side thinks that person's going to destroy the world or whatever. And I don't necessarily think it is, I don't think it has anything to do with Trump. I don't think it had anything to do with Obama. I don't think it had anything to do with the Senate or the Congress or the parliaments of the world. What I honestly believe is that however you figure we got here, that we have capabilities, we have gifts, we have resources that if basically used in a proper manner, there wouldn't be no, you know, phrases such as you know, starvation in the world or homelessness and sickness, environmental problems and wars and rumors of wars, plagues, famines, pestilence, whatever you want. The division, I believe, out here in this world is intentional. I believe there are greedy individuals that want to stay in power. So it's not about Trump. It's not about some politician that you disagree with. And it's definitely not about your neighbor. This isn't the red team. It's not the blue team or the green team. It's the people team. And until we come to some sort of understanding that, you know, by ourselves we can do pretty amazing things. But together, there's nothing that we can't resolve. You see it every time there's a natural disaster, you know, or even a man-made disaster for that matter. You see it in the people when the poor people come together and they share what they do have. They share their blankets, they share their coats, they share their food, they share their medicine, They reach down and they pull the person out of the ditch or rescue them from the fire. You know, there's something built inside the human spirit that just is just so amazing. So I'm not here to convince you whether there is or isn't a God. You know, I have my own personal beliefs on that. I have my own personal beliefs on terminology that I think is pretty divisive out there, you know, like the religion or organized religion or, you know, differences in denominations of churches and all this kind of stuff. You know, everybody's seen things differently, so they went their own path and they formed their own church. They formed their own, you know, religion. They formed their own things. But it's not the belief in a higher power that is the problem. It's the fact that in any type of system out there, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That kind of thing right there. Because, you know, when people get a taste of power, you know, then that officer puts that badge on his chest and he knows he has power now to enforce the law, and he can carry around a gun where nobody else can carry around a gun, and he can do things, you know, that the average Joe would probably go to jail for. You know, and we could go on and on into how, you know, different things such as, you know, senators or, you know, diplomatic immunity and all these different things, and how wealth and status can actually, you know, get things done in this world. We elevate people of what we believe to celebrity status, almost up to godlike status, to where, you know, we worship them, you know, and it's no man or woman out here is above or below each other. We're all created equal in the eyes of God. That's my personal belief. But regardless of whether you believe in God or not, you should still believe that each one of us are equal. And for anyone to be king or, you know, whatever, dictator, anyone to be above others, you know, to me it just makes absolutely no sense. Because just like those pieces of the puzzle, you got a 500-piece puzzle. You take one of those pieces out, well, you never can get the big picture. You can't finish the puzzle. There's so much that I want to say in order to try to convince the world what I think needs to actually be done, but it's not my words alone that's going to be able to do it. And money can't fix this. We can't throw money at everything in this world and figure that money's going to resolve it, because the greed out there is just, it's off the scale. I had some really interesting points that I wanted to make, but sometimes it's just there's so much to say that you just can't figure out which word is the most important to say. And words are powerful. Your words are more powerful than you can possibly imagine. So when you're out there and you're red teaming and blue teaming against one another, in the meantime, you know, you got all these corrupt individuals just literally getting by with everything, not excluding murder. We got our work cut out for us if we're ever to fix this world. There's so much that needs to be done. But the key, the biggest key in this whole entire thing that keeps on seeming to getting overlooked is that we can't do it alone. We can't rely on the corporations or the companies or the governments or, you know, any political system or religious ideology or organized religion. Let's just say hypothetically we are on our own. Let's say there is no creator, there is no God. That means it's up to us. So if we're ever to make it any farther into the future, if we're ever to make a world that our children and their children can live in happily ever after, then it's up to us to do it, because there is no Savior coming, according to a lot of people out there that believe that way. And I believe that if you look in the mirror, you're going to see a miracle. You are a miracle. You think about yourself. You think about the journey you made getting to where you're at right now. It is epic. Each one of you have a story to be told. Each one of you have adventures of a lifetime. You have adventures that you've shared with one another. You've had trials and tribulations. You have had a story. Each one of you have had an amazing journey just to be right here where you're at. Just to be able to stop and take the time to listen in to this Knights of the Round Table that, by the way, you're listening to at peopleforpeopleradio.network and shazizradio.network or shazizradio.com and all the other affiliated broadcasters that share our message weekly. It's amazing. It's a truly honoring and humbling experience to know that even so much as one individual would take the time out of that amazing journey of their life to spend listening to us talk about things. It's a blessing. You're a blessing. Each and every one of you and your families are a blessing. We all, deep down inside, we want good things for each other. You know, we're not here to prove that God exists. We're not here to prove that God doesn't exist. We're here to find solutions to problems in the world. But I'm saying, from my point of view, from everything that I've witnessed, all this thing that we call hunger and homelessness and sickness, environmental hazards and wars and rumors of wars, plagues, famines, pestilence, division, corruption, and it goes on and on, the lack of morality in society today. Money's not going to fix that. The most powerful entity that is in existence is all of humanity. You know, how do you put a price on one person's life? How do you decide whether it's all right to sacrifice one person to save two people? How do you do that? Because once again, going back to that piece of the puzzle thing right there, you take out that one or two pieces of the puzzle to save the other 498 of them. Well, once again, you'll never be able to complete that big picture. That's why each and every life out there is so incredibly important, because each of you are a piece of that puzzle. I think our Creator did something amazing by taking and dividing up all the talents and all the gifts and all the things that we have to offer one another amongst all the people equally out there. It's everywhere. You think you ain't got a talent? Well, you haven't really paid attention to yourself. You've got some pretty amazing things that you can do. There's ways that you can say things that nobody else could ever, they could never match it. They might get close in the words or the terminology or even the meaning for that matter, but nobody can do what you can do. Nobody but you can be you. There might be a million people named Stephen. Might even have the last name Gibbons. There might be a million of them. But there's only one Stephen Gibbons. There's only one that I know. But, you know, you took a look at Barbara and Patty and Barry and all the different people that show up on this Knights of the Round Table show. There's only one of each of them, and each one of them are special and unique in their own way. They bring to the table a gift that is unmatchable by anyone else at that table. And it's universal. I mean, it's for each and every individual out there. We all bring something special to the table. The best thing that we bring to the table is the understanding that though we might have differences, we can sit here and we can work through these differences, and we can point out the problems and we can point out the solutions. And we're hoping that those words, like Barbara's always saying, that we're planting the seeds, we may never get to see the fruits of our labor, but someday down the road those words are going to resonate in the right heart and get the right thing done at the right time in order to make the difference. I think we're on that track. No, folks, money can't fix this. Money can't fix this world. It's caused a lot of problems, this thing we call money. Whether it be gold or silver or whatever, all the shiny things that somebody felt the necessary that they needed so badly that they were willing to do just about anything for, is why we're in the world that we're in today. And all this time while you're out there arguing with your brothers and sisters, somebody out there is making out like a bandit. They don't care that you're divided. They don't care who you vote for. And honestly, I don't think they even really want gun control. I don't think they want to take those guns away from you because you're making them money every time you pull that gun out and harm somebody. You're making them money. You know, and all they got to do is tell you that they're going to take them and next everybody goes out and buys more. You know, Nicolas Cage was in a movie, he was an arms dealer and he was selling to both sides of a war. And it's a pretty interesting show. If you haven't seen it, you watch it, you know, at the end he has some sort of reckoning, but he understands, you know, there's something different going on there. But it's just one little tiny example. We got our work cut out for us, seriously. You know, the moral decline of society, we can argue whether it is or isn't, and whether it's always been here or not been here. But if we keep going the path that we're on, there was a story, a biblical story about Sodom and Gomorrah. it was pretty interesting. Well, we might be that second story or third or whatever. You know, as a Christian, I see things in a completely different fashion than most of the people out there that are Christian. And I hear the deals. You know, in the Old Testament, God was running around smiting everybody. In the New Testament, he had a change of heart and was loving everybody. So, what can I say about the Bible or the story of it? Or, you know, who wrote it and who didn't write it? My point is this, if any book in this world is questionable because it was written by man, then all books should be questionable. You know, you should question everything that you hear. You should question where this information come from. But we base a lot of the things that we believe on faith, literally. Whether you're a creationist or whether you're an evolutionist, you base it on faith. You base it on the faith that whoever wrote that information, whoever come together and shared that information with you, was doing it for an honest purpose or, you know, whatever. And so, none of us really know the full truth. We've been at the mercy of trying to walk these rabbit holes and find where the real truth is. But what stands true after all of this stuff that I just rambled on about is that there's no way to get around the fact that without one another, we're not going to survive this journey through life. At least not to the point where we can bring this world around to where we all envision it, to where our families are fed, they're housed and they're clothed and they're happy and they're safe. And we can't end the wars and we can't end the rumors of wars. We can't end the plagues and the famine and the pestilence if we're not willing to look back and see the mistakes that we made in order to not repeat them in the future. As long as we can't sit down at the table and have a conversation with one another, as long as there are people who get to control the narrative, to say, you can't say this, you can't talk about this, you can't talk about that, as long as we're censored, as long as all these things, all these factors that you're hearing about today in this world that we live in are at play, then we're never going to be able to get it done. All the money in the world ain't going to fix starvation if the people in this world aren't willing to get up and make that problem go away. I'm 54 years old. I've been watching commercials on TV since I was a child. Since I was a young child, I was watching TV and I was seeing commercials with starving babies. And in all that time, I saw wars. I heard rumors of wars. I saw greed. I saw corruption. I saw violence. I saw things that no man or woman should ever have to lay eyes upon. And through all that, nobody was ever able to solve a problem that to me is so ridiculously simple to solve. You got the food, you got the equipment, you got the power, you take the food over, you feed the baby, you give them medicine, you give them clothes, and you put a roof over that baby's head. It's simple. But you have to ask the biggest question of all is why? Why is it that for the majority of 54 years of my life alone that we couldn't get our act together and ensure that at the very least every child on this world was fed? Somebody explain that to me. It breaks my heart, it rips at my soul, and it drives me to madness to think that after all this time, we can't solve that one. I get the homeless thing, okay? You know, not everybody is willingly homeless. But a child that can't have food or fresh water or medicine? These politicians out here that talk the good talk, they say whatever they have to say to get elected, and they get up there and they promise that they're going to bring to you world peace. The same promises that the United Nations and the Blue Helmets have been promising for decades. For a long, long time, they've promised you peace. And they brought you only pain and suffering. And at the same exact time, folks, you're supporting them by standing against your brothers and sisters. Money can't fix that. Only you can. Hi, Barbara. How you doing?
Hey there. Just listening here, hanging out with you. Hey, everybody out there in this amazing world.
It's good to be back, by the way, and thank you very much. You did. You and Patty, I tell you, I just enjoyed that show so much.
Well, we're glad you liked it. We weren't sure. Well, we said, why did Chaz hand us over this big, important, Knights of the Roundtable show? I guess, either he was taking a leap of faith there or he knew something we didn't know. I don't know, but...
I'll tell you what, you brought me to tears. I'll tell you that. You did.
Oh, well, that's a beautiful thing. Yeah. Tears of joy, I guess, right?
Yeah, tears of joy. I was like,
yeah, so, yeah, hey, everybody, again out there, it's nice to see you all, and I'm talking to you here from what we call Turtle Island. My name is Barbara Three Crow, and I'm listening to you, my brother there, Chaz, and, you know, we talk, yeah, the money can't fix this thing, and I was thinking, well, what the heck ever happened? What happened? Because I think, you know, the Garden of Eden was this Mother Earth. I don't think the Garden of Eden was some remote, you know, unknown whatever planet or place or whatever.
It must have been beautiful, Barbara. I always said, you ever seen polished rocks?
Yeah.
Imagine what it would have looked like to walk down like a rocky beach along a clear water stream with those colors just everywhere. I mean, it must have looked like diamonds and jewels laying all over. This world must have been so incredibly beautiful the very first day of creation. It must have been so wonderful.
Well, I feel that, and I often think of that because we live here in the Hudson Valley, which is an extraordinary. Of course, I feel like everywhere, when I look at sometimes of the photographs of places in the world that I will probably never get to, I'm in awe of the extraordinary and diverse beauty of this creation. And, you know, it just is amazing to me. I live here in the Hudson Valley where we have beautiful mountains and we have a great river here called, well, our people called it the Mahikanituck, the river that flows both ways. Now it's called the Hudson River because, you know, it was after that Hudson guy. Anyway, I just often think about what it was like here because this river was, you know, beautiful and pure. It goes all the way from this tiny little as spring output way, way up in the Adirondacks and then starts to flow through as a little creek and then it goes out into larger. It goes all the way through this valley down to through Manhattan out to the ocean. So this river travels far. And once when the Indian people, which there were thousands of different tribes here and millions of Indian people here on Turtle Island, living here for thousands and thousands of years, there were dolphins in this river, there were whales, there were manatee, there were all kinds of things here, and they ate from the river, and then GE Electric came along, and up north from us here, up in Albany area, and they started pouring in their pollutants into the waters, and for many, many years, nobody noticed, you know, so now we have this polluted river where they warn people don't eat the fish if you're pregnant, but if you're not pregnant you could eat the fish but you can only have a certain percentage of it and blah blah blah, you know. I mean, it's a travesty what has happened, but I was thinking about the Garden of Eden and how it was in the early times when the First Nations people, and I'm not just talking about here on Turtle Island. When I say First Nations people, or call them Earth people, because they were all over the world. There were tribal people all over the world, in Europe, everywhere, South America, North America, the continents, every place there were original people, little tribal people. And, you know, looking at this, the fires, for instance, we just went through the Paradise Fire in California. That was the first one that we all noticed, that where people died, 80-some people died, and then there were others coming up there, fires. Now we have Australia. I mean, it's stunning. It's shocking, the burning, the amount of life lost there of creatures, thousands, some million, I don't know what they said. I don't even have it in front of me. Animals. Of course, then you have their habitat, you know, so I'm looking at that, and I know that, I just found this little blurb here by this scientist study talking about the management of the Indian people managed the land. It's like the Europeans, when they came here, they saw a natural Garden of Eden, you know, I mean, that they were in awe of this part of the world when they got here, because they had already messed up their part of the world over there, made a mess of it, you know. But what this was it was a managed landscape. So, like in North America here, there was large-scale burning that the Indian people were managing the land, and this is known. So they didn't domesticate animals for meat. What they did was they retooled the ecosystem to encourage, like, for instance, the deer, the bear, the elk, and so it was the constant burning of undergrowth. This increased the numbers of the herbivores and various things that they used, that the people ate. And same thing in the Amazon and in the rainforest. So that would be also on Australia, because I just read an article about Aboriginal people there, because, you know, looking at these recent fires out there in Australia, yes, and some of them were set by idiot people or crazed people or who, I don't know what's going on with people, but some of them also, majority of the fires came about due to, as the Aboriginals say there, poor management of the land by the government. And the Aboriginal people said they did burning. Also, it's the same thing here in this part of the world. The Indian people managed the lands by the burning, but they didn't just set a fire, because the Indian people were so connected to the lands and were given the responsibility of these, of the land, their place, their home, and they knew the way to burn, when to burn, what the temperatures made a difference, they said. The winds, of course, or the time of the years, but they just didn't set a fire and let the fire go. It was controlled, and that was a reason. So the Aboriginal people are saying now, as these fires in Australia are devastating the land and killing millions of animals, And you know, creating thousands of people homeless now. They have no homes. Their homes are being burned down. And some have lost their lives, too. Firefighters have lost their lives as well. That they're talking about, the Aboriginal people are saying, our government, the government is destroying this land because of their poor land management. So, yeah, talking about the Garden of Eden and what the heck we've done to this place, you know, this beautiful gift, it's like, you know, greed and the separation, okay? And then, of course, money. We say money is the root of all evil. We'll start there, folks.
Yep.
So all you have to do is just start. What caused this problem? I was thinking, well, you know, the Industrial Revolution or the Agricultural Revolution may have been a big mistake. After all, I don't know, whatever you think.
It's possible. Well, I got to tell you something, because I was telling you a long time ago about these deer on my property, and I said, one of these days, I'm going to pet one of those deer. And I came so incredibly close about 2, 3, 4 days back, somewhere around about less than a week. I was out there by the pond, and there was this baby deer that I guess I caught by surprise, and so I kind of kneeled down and started talking to this deer, and that deer literally was walking towards me, and I had my hand out, and I'll be doggone, here comes one of those cats that we have around here, and that little cat run up and scared off that deer. But I was close. I honestly feel if I hadn't been interrupted by that cat, that deer would have come to me. That was amazing. So I can only imagine what the Garden of Eden must have really been like when man and woman had a spiritual connection with nature. That would have been so amazing.
Well, and that was very present with the first peoples, and I'm talking about not just Indian people, because, as I say, earth people, because you have the nations of the black nation, the yellow, even the white and red nations originally were close to the land. They were tribal people, you know. They had their sacred fires, too. They had their awareness of the changing of the seasons, the movements of the stars. And this goes back very, very far. So they had an awareness, because they had to have awareness. They had to know survival skills. They had to work together. They needed each other. You know, today, people don't need each other. They're like outside of the, you know, outside of that unity, that system where we do need each other. And right now, we're being divided. Well, that's been going on for a while. I'm going to say way back. It's been people have been divided. And, you know, you can't take the money with you. You can't take your wealth with you. When you're going to go, you're going to go like everybody else. The poor person, the wealthy person, the disenfranchised, everybody, we're all going to the same place.
Just like the song, Naked is the Day You Were Born.
Yeah.
You ain't got no pockets. It's not, yeah, I get it. You know, there's a song out there called Stairway to Heaven, Led Zeppelin. It's kind of like what we see going on out there. I honestly kind of feel bad for rich people, because that all that money that you have would seem to me to be a shackle, a ball and chain, you know. In order to protect your stack, you gotta keep an eye on it. You know, somebody's gonna steal it from you or whatever. But, you know, I've been for many years of my life walked around with not even a penny in my pocket, and some of those some of those years of my life were probably the happiest times of my life, just because you actually get to see who your real friends are, who your real family is. You know, you get to see the real reality of humanity when you don't have anything to offer but your love from your heart, or you know your labor, or some sort of kind act or whatever. You get to see the real humanity at that point. It's when you introduce the money into the situation, when you introduce the gold and the celebrity status and the power, that's when the problems begin. And there's a lot of people out there, a lot of actors and actresses that we've uplifted on the pedestal, and, you know, we're amazed by their talents and their movies and stuff like that. And they live in really fancy mansions, and they have all this money and you know, all this kind of stuff. And they're on TV telling you that you need to give your money to people who are starving.
And yeah.
I don't get that. Really?
Well, I don't know if the money's the money's the solving factor here. This is what everything today, it seems, is based on money. You know, you say, we'll give money to this charity. Well, now we're finding out that some of these charities, a great majority of these charities, that the people they're claiming they're going to give money to or help them with this money, they're not getting the help, and they're not getting the money, or whatever they're needing. They're not getting it. You know, so that, again, you got greed coming in here, you know, selfishness and greed and the separation. This is, to me, though, I have to look at what is going on today in our world, is due to an agenda. It's due to a plan. Something happens. You know, there's an intrusive element here that is very dark, and it's pitting us against each other. I mean, I see that every day, you know.
Yeah.
People have lost their connectedness to not only nature, but their true nature, you know? And I think that was a decisive, you know, agenda. Let's separate everybody from their true nature, which is the spirit within them, or their sacredness, or their identification as one people of different colors, or rainbow warriors, we call ourselves today, right? Or creation, all part of this creation. You know, if you're living here on this Mother Earth, you're part of this creation. You're not separate. You know, but people are being basically separating themselves and are told to separate because of, well, that you're a different color, or you're a different level of, you know, well, you've got money, so you don't want to associate with those people, or vice versa. This is, to me, a total madness and a dark plan to corrupt and disrupt what was originally this beautiful creation, this Garden of Eden, but also people needing each other, working together in unity. And, you know, we talk about when a disaster happens, I think you mentioned that, how people don't wait for the rescuers to come. They become the rescuers, you know. Thank goodness that's still something inside of people. And we see that over and over again. And, yeah, I'm sure there are people who just bypass and they don't give a crap, you know, they don't care. But it seems like people pull together when there is a disaster, right? I mean, I said earlier to you when we were talking earlier, I said, you know, the thing is that people don't turn to a source, and I'm not going to even name that source, but I'm going to say it's something far greater than us little people. They don't turn to that source anymore. They don't connect with it and know they're one with. And they don't relate to it until they're hanging off the cliff by their fingernails.
Yeah, and they say there are no atheists in the trenches. In a war, there's no atheists in the trenches. Oh, God, save me, you know. And like, wait a second. You can't be saved by something that you don't believe exists. You know, it's
It is, because I think it's innate within us, and people don't identify it. They don't want to identify it because they're told, well, it doesn't exist, and that's a bunch of hooey dooey. You know, that's you know, for your grandmother or your grandfather. You know, it's like that's not relevant. What's relevant is the amount of money that you have, or the house, the size of the house that you have. You know, that's what's relevant today. You know, and disregard others who have less, and they're just, you know, what they say, they're just the fodder, you know, they're not...
Cannon fodder, you're right.
Yeah.
Sorry, I added your sister in there, and that kind of cut you out there a second.
Yeah.
But before we move along, even in organized religion, doesn't matter which one you want to talk about, there's division because there's so many different denominations, versions of each one of them, and they don't even see that. They're supposed to be, you know, they're as, you know, children of God to work together and all that kind of stuff, but they don't see that they even in their own belief system, they have their own divided system, and it plays the same out no matter what you talk about, whether it be a political, religious, or just on an individual basis out there with people out there protesting whatever they believe or don't believe or like or dislike. And all of this, just like I honestly believe you're so right when you say that this is intentional for whatever power is behind there. You know, the book says,
okay,
we don't fight against flesh and blood.
Well, you know, you're right. And the thing is, when you say there's something afoot here, there's an agenda here. Well, you have to look at that. You just can't say, oh, yeah, there's an agenda here. But what do you mean? What exactly do you mean there's an agenda here, okay, and it's something dark? You know, there's something going on here. So you have to take a look at that. I think we've come so far away. We've been so far removed incrementally, step by step, unbeknownst to us, incrementally over generations and generations to bring us to where we are today, where people don't care. They just don't care. They live their lives, you know, in selfishly, you know, not connected. They're disconnected. And I think that was incrementally set up. Like I said, when you're a child, it's like, you know, train the children. It's indoctrination of our generations prior to you and I here. And of course, I'm in my 70s, so it's been going on in my people's, here for a long time. But we have to go way back. And something started to happen, and I feel it's right from the beginning. To me, it's sort of like the battle of the dark and the light. So you have something that exists, and I know people don't want to believe this. I know people have been indoctrinated to not believe that there is something very evil. I don't care what you call it, because we have the capacity to do dark things, even as a people. You know, we're not perfect, pure beings here. You know, we're in this big school, I think, and oftentimes I wonder, well, you know, what are we all doing here? Why did we come down to this garden or put down here on this Garden of Eden and then to mess it up? Do you think that was a good idea? You know, I mean, people are just focused on what it is now. They don't reflect upon what it once was, you know. Like I'm going to say again, long before the banks were, you know, brought forth, or the Industrial Revolution, or the Agricultural Revolution. I mean, the Agricultural Revolution made a mess of things. Think about the way these mega farms, these industries, these corporations destroy the land.
Oh, it's not only that either. It's the abundance of food that is actually cultivated and stored, that there is a very large majority of that food that gets destroyed.
It gets destroyed.
And it don't make it to people who could really use it.
I can remember seeing these pictures years ago because the milk prices, they were messing with the milk prices, and dairy farmers were pouring out milk onto the earth. Because they couldn't sell their milk at a price and make money on it.
Ain't that a shame?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, on the TV, there's a baby, all skinny and sickly looking, and I tell
yeah.
you, it just tears me up just to think about it. Barbara, one thing real quick. When I'm sitting there eating dinner, and I get down, I'm full, I'm down to the very last crumb or whatever, and I'm thinking, I'm going to scrape this off into the trash. I force myself to finish that because, waste.
Well, that's
me.
Not so good.
No, but it's just...
If
you was raised the way that I was raised in a real... You may have been, but I was raised in a really poor family. We ate weird stuff like split pea soup, things...
Well, we ate Spam.
Yeah, oh my God, I feel bad for you.
It
I can't
good.
Stand it.
But
to somebody, that would be a gourmet meal. And so as I watched my life went on and I watched, differences between my brothers and myself and the recognition of how hard my mom worked and, you know, what kind of support she would get from my father and so on down the line. And I watched other people out there. I gained this something inside me that I just, everyone in this world deserves to eat. Everyone in this world deserves food and medicine and fresh water and a home. Everyone deserves at least that. Those are the basic necessities of life. And when I see people doing without, or I maybe bit off more than I could chew and may put too much on my plate, you know, I will go out and feed the cats or something like that so it don't go in the trash. But I'm just saying, that's how much I understand what's going on in this world. I'm incredibly blessed. And
yeah,
I don't want to waste that.
I find it interesting that they put those commercials for starvation in the world up well at the appropriate time when you're eating dinner, when everybody in the United States is on the dinner table. There shouldn't be anybody starving in this world. There's so much abundance in this world, but you know, people have become, here's the system, people have become, were placed on reliance of the system. So people moved away from their own gardens. People moved away from their own connectedness to the earth, going out on the land and finding the, you know, the fruits and berries and the roots and various other things that the original people lived off of, you know. So there's this disconnect done deliberately where people now are so reliant on the system, and the system is not functioning very well at all. Not only that, but they poisoned the food that those people are eating is basically, you know, corrupted and poisoned food, you know, but there shouldn't be any starvation in this world. Now our water, people are drinking, you know, the water that's killing them. It's sick, you know, because they put chlorine in it and they put fluoride in it. Who did that? Well, it's a big corporation because they were greedy. So this is what I'm saying. The people are reliant upon the system, and that was a plan. Get the people reliant on the system so people don't even know how to go out on the earth and find the various fruits and even the medicines that are there for us.
That's
but,
the biggest,
you know,
problem
when
right
I was,
there.
Huh?
What you just said, that's the biggest problem right there. If the system collapsed, how many people do you know that are able to go out there and be able to do what the natives did all those years?
Their ancestors.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just the native people. It's everybody's ancestors had to do this, and they did it.
Yeah.
Okay? They knew how to be on the land. They knew how to preserve the land. They knew how to manage the land, as I said earlier, to bring the growth back for the animals, to keep the animals, you know, the wild animals. And when the Europeans came here, they brought, you know, cattle and pigs and various other things. Well, when the Europeans came here, they started to really destroy this nature here, this naturalness of the way the Indian people kept it. They started to mess it up big time. And so now you have everybody dependent and reliant upon the system, and they can't basically take care of themselves. If and when the whole thing collapses, and I think that it very well looks like we're heading that way. But, you know, I was born in 1942, and I can remember that when the first TV came out, black and white little TV, you know, and so there was one station on it, but I can remember those commercials, too. And we were told constantly at the dinner table, finish your food because there are people starving in China.
Yep.
You know, I didn't even know where China was. But then you got to realize, well, it's the guilt factor. Let's get everybody guilty here, you know, so you punish yourself, you know, if you can't, then you stuff yourself, and now we have obesity.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, we have overconsumption of the wrong types of food, which isn't even nutrients, you know.
Well,
because the system gave us all these terrible foods to eat.
Yeah, lucky for me, I've got a metabolism like a chihuahua, so I can eat and I don't get fat.
I get that. I'm sure you do.
Oh, man.
But it's kind of like, we have money is the root of all evil. You know, when the people were trading, okay, you had something I needed or I had something you needed, and we sat down together and we talked about it and we made a trade.
Yep.
You know, well, when money came in, this changed everything. Everything went to hell, I think, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
And so now we have this, the root of all evil. And I'm going to say it again. Money is the root of all evil. You know, I'm going to say that. It has separated us not only from each other, because everybody's divided now according to how much money you have. You're in an elite club, or you're better than some, or whatever. You know, you're... the deplorables here on the land, you know, you don't want to talk to those deplorables. You don't even want to look at them. You spit on them, the deplorables.
Some of those people, Barbara, some of those people that are actually calling us deplorables have never actually been in a Walmart or a grocery store.
Oh, my gosh.
Did you know that?
Well, I've never been in it. I don't go to Walmart, but I'm just saying, no, you're right. They don't even know what it's like to go up to a cash register and have to root around in your, you know, in your wallet or whatever for money to pay for the overpriced food that isn't, doesn't even have any value.
Yeah. So they don't have that experience of having to worry about where their next meal's coming from.
When you have everything handed to you from the time you're born, everything handed, you have privilege, you see. You have privilege, and you look down upon others who are less privileged, who don't have the... But I have to say that there's something that is missing in those people. I do have to point that out, you know. You can have all the money in the world. You can have the biggest this and that. You can have anything you want, and there's something missing inside of you, okay? If you're not helping people, if you have been fortunate... If you've been fortunate in your life and where you have money or you have a big home or you have this or that and you maintain that this is yours and you want more, there's something missing inside of you. If you look down upon people, if you don't care whether the forests are burning or whether they're destroying the oceans or the water or the animals are dying, there's something missing inside of you.
Yep.
You know, and that something is so important, it's so essential, because when that's missing, that piece, you are what I call just that hungry person. You want more and more and more, because you're trying to satisfy something that the more, that the what you're accumulating, you know, is not going to fill that. It's just not, and that's deliberate. It makes people, you know, again, able to do harm to others, or be careless, or not even care, or disregard, or disrespect. Because there's something missing inside of them. I have that something. You have that something. My sister Patty has that something. And there are others we know that has that. We're not wealthy people. You know, we're kind of poor people. Thank goodness, though, we're blessed in many, many ways. And the biggest blessing that we have, and I'm going to call it the blessing, is that we have that missing piece inside of us that those with all the money in the world, you know, the prestige people, whatever you want to call them, the top elite people, the Megans and Harrys and the Oprahs and all those people, and the politicians that are all on the same level, they're missing the most vital piece, and they'll never find it with all that money.
Yeah, and I wish just for one minute they could see through our eyes to see the world the way that we see it. I really do. I wish that the whole world, for somehow, some way, that could actually literally see through our eyes to see it the way that we do, because it's a whole different perspective. I'm not saying I'm better than anybody else. That's not what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is, I've been down some hard roads in my life, and I get it. I honestly get it. As far as the meaning of life, I mean, you can't get much more meaning of life than this conversation that was going on in the chat room about grandchildren. Grandchildren are amazing. You know, they're destructive, they're messy, you know.
Well, they're trying to find their way just like we did.
Yeah.
You know?
But they are a miracle. I mean, I just so much enjoy when my granddaughters come over and they make me little pictures and say, love you, Papa, on it, you know, and I get to spend that time with them, and it's just, you know, it's a miracle to me.
Well, what you just said, you say your grandchildren are miracles. Well, guess what? You were somebody's grandchild, too. You were somebody's child, and we're all miracles. See, this is the missing piece, is people don't look at that. That life, this life, birth, life, creation, is a miracle. But people, you know, people are, you know, disconnected from that miracle. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about this awesome miracle, this amazing creation, and the one or the process or the dreamers or the frequencies or whatever it is that created this. Okay, they're disconnected from it, you know? That's what I say.
Well, and I can't disagree with you at all. I mean, I tell you what, I wrote my mom something really nice one time, you know, because my mom always thought she was hard on me. She always thought that, you know, because I was her wild child, she always thought she was too hard on me. But yeah. I wrote this really lovely thing about how important and how much I love her, and she hangs it on the wall to this very day. It's just amazing. Every time I go through there and I look at that and I read the words that I wrote to my mom, I am so incredibly blessed to have such a wonderful mother that I do. She went through so many trials and tribulations and had to be a single parent for the majority of my upbringing. And, you know, I am so thankful that that wonderful miracle was in my life. That wonderful miracle is what brought me into this world.
I want to say something on that because I know a lot of people... might be listening and they might say, well, I hated my mother, or my mother was a whatever, this or that, or my dad was a whatever, this or that. But you know what? They're why you're here.
Yep.
Right? They're why you're here. So you have to look at that piece. And you know, you could go through the rest of your life blaming your mother, blaming your father, blaming this one and blaming that one. You're not a child any longer. You know, your life is now in your hands. What are you going to make of it? How are you going to participate in this time you're here on the earth? Are you going to sit there and be on the pity pot and blame mother, father, you know, mommy, daddy, blame God, blame everybody else, you know? I know stuff happened. Yeah, I mean, I grew up in an alcoholic family. It's like that was not a fun place to be. And there was a lot of damage done. It was not a good legacy to leave for the five children that I was in, you know, part of my family. But looking back, I mean, so, okay, I went through that, that stuff that we go through, but you gotta get out of it.
Yeah.
You have to pull yourself up and become a human being here, become a responsible person, and to become a caring person, and don't pass that legacy. That, you know, so your people screwed up. Well, what happened to them when they were kids? Okay, so then you look at your grandmother and your grandfather, you look at what their ordeal was, but I'm talking about, again, an incremental system that lied to us, that really corrupted us, corrupted our minds and our bodies.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm going to say the spirit in everyone. All our generations, you know, were lied to, manipulated, indoctrinated. And here we find ourselves today. You want to hang around and still stay in that blame game? You can do that if you want. You're not going to get very far. You're just going to be miserable and make yourself sick anyway.
And however we got here, it's, you know, it's neither here nor there, because we can't do anything about the past except for try not to repeat the mistakes. But now that we're here, regardless of how we got here and who was wrong in the process of getting us here, now we are standing at a crossroads with the opportunity of a lifetime to literally do and say the right thing to make this world better. I still believe in the dream. As crazy as it sounds, as bad as things might appear out there, I still believe that
it's in our hands. It's in our hands to fulfill this dream. But
yep.
If you think that... I think that the dream is dead because people allowed it to become dead.
Yeah.
You know, you could blame because they're blaming other people.
I think the same thing would apply to a divine, you know, creator or whatever. If people in their mind have, you know, basically elevated themselves to godlike status in their mind, you know, because of their celebrity status or their political position in life and all that, and you know, science has become God to them, and so you know, there is there's nobody else but them. They get that mindset, and nothing else matters anymore. Well, you see all these children raised up in a society that just about everything goes. It's a free-for-all, every man or woman for himself. You know, it's all about me. And when they don't realize that it's never been all about them. You know, it's never been all about any individual out here. You said earlier that you think that we're like quite literally in a school, and I honestly believe that's the case. I believe that's the reason why we're here, to learn. And, you know, so far, it seems like for the most part that a lot of the lessons haven't been realized. We haven't figured it out yet. We haven't figured out that war is not a path to peace. Peace never came from the end of a barrel of a gun. It never came from the end of a sword. And it's even been said that if you live by the sword, you shall surely die by the sword. I don't want to die by a sword. You know, I don't want anybody else to die by a sword.
Well, let's say that something, I don't even have to identify, but I think you'll know what I mean, something knew or realized this plan, this sacred plan, divine plan, whatever you want to call it, that placed us here, created us here to be in this school. Yep. And that we were supposed to learn something here, something good. Well, we're going to make mistakes. It's like every child that leaves the house goes out in the world and they fall down. Or they get scrapes, bumps, whatever. They fall down, they fall off of cliffs. And well, we're supposed to be learning from this life experience to become better. And you learn from your mistakes, right? But let's say something, you know, decided to corrupt this and corrupt humanity into just becoming greedy people, careless people, disrespectful people, hateful people. And, and then you have the war machine that figured out, well, hey, we can make a lot of money. There you go, greed again. It's like this mindset of corrupting and disrupting something so sacred. The opportunity that we had here, that we were given here. And I'm going to go back again to that this was a garden of Eden, you know, and the original people, the earth peoples, of all, black, red, yellow, and white, all were connected. They were tribal. This was original. I'm not saying they didn't have their skirmishes or whatever. Stuff happened. But it's nothing like today. You know, we have weapons of mass destruction. Up in Canada, there was just an alert to people in this community about some nuclear plant. Something was going on. Of course, they're not telling you, but they put out an alert, an alarm for the people to be aware and to listen to their alert station. But no, don't worry. There's no leaks here. Just be alert. Something happened? No, they're not telling you what happened, but don't worry, there's no leaks. Well, what the heck happened? I mean, what happened? They're putting out an alarm, an alert to these people, but they're not saying what happened, but they're pointing in a big no leak. Don't get a, you know, there was no leaks, but what's the alarm? What's the alert? I'm just saying, it's like, it becomes pretty insane. What this industrial revolution, what the agricultural revolution, what this advancement, what this technology, oh, it's all good. Well, you know what? We have choices, and I feel like we were put here to make the choices. You could turn on that pathway and use technology or something that comes to you, science, for either good or not good. You could do that. That's what we're here for, you know, is to make these choices. We have free will. You can be hateful, you can be harmful, or you could be a good, compassionate person. That's your school you're in. You're in school, you know. But as I said before, no matter who you are, what you have, what you own, or what you've achieved, it does not matter in the end. How do you feel? Do you have inner peace? Do you feel like I've left a beautiful legacy here for my grandchildren and the coming generations? When the time comes for you to go, you can't take it with you. So what's all this about? What is all this whole stuff about? What's this mess about that we've got ourselves into?
What if?
Here she is.
Here I am.
Hey, sis.
Wonderful conversation. But I was just thinking as you were talking, you know, what if this experience that we have here, this ability to experience this life and to make these choices, what if the difficulties that we face in the infrastructure, the system that has been put in place, we look at it, we see that it is technologically designed in a destructive manner. We see that society is designed in a destructive manner. We see all of these systems that are designed in a destructive manner. What if the purpose of all of this destructive engineering is to simply keep us tied to this experience and not realize that we're just moving through it?
Excellent. You're absolutely right. Excellent point. Yeah, because let's look at the far greater picture here. Let's step back and look at you know, look at the big puzzle and get some clarity on, okay, what is really going on and what is the bigger picture here? And I want to say, when I say the bigger picture, I'm going to identify that as part of the mystery, right? The great mysterious. There's something far greater going on here, and what you just identified to me is part of that.
And the only way to win this game is for us to realize that we, each one of us, being a piece of that puzzle, are like that gear in the machine. The gear doesn't work without one of us. And how many of us are we killing on a daily basis? It's going to take generations for the next gear to come into being that is going to replace the ones that we have already destroyed. Does that make any sense to anybody but me? Every time a child's born, he's going to grow up. He or she's going to grow up. And they're going to become that replacement for that piece of puzzle that somehow or another, society had either killed in a war or disease it took or, you know, for whatever reason. But until we realize that each one of us are part of this wonderful creation, we're part of this machine, then we're not going to take our place in there to make this thing function or to actually see that big picture that, you know, is all of creation. If we could only step back and see all the mistakes that we've been doing all along and have the wisdom to be able to work through that together, I think that would be the only thing outside of divine intervention that humanity would be able to resolve all these problems. You look on there, you'll see them everywhere. There's some problems. There's so many problems out there that they keep telling us we have.
And they don't look at the solutions. No. There are so many solutions as well. We're not given those solutions. It's something I think we have to come up with the solutions, right? But supposing supposing what you said, sis, about that we are actually moving through this experience, right? That this is not just this piece. How are we moving through this experience? And so I'm thinking about the coming generations. You know, in our Indian culture, they lived their life, and every determination and decision they made, they took into consideration the next generations coming. In other words, what we do today, how will that affect the generations coming forward, right? This is a consciousness, an awareness, a connectedness of a greater, relationship here. The significance of yourself being here, at this moment in time, what are you doing? What are you leaving? What's the legacy you're leaving? And that's, I'm talking about leaving everything here. We're leaving the earth for the coming generations. We're leaving a legacy. And what are we leaving? And that's all I'm just saying.
Well, yeah, and when we look back at the ancestry, at our ancestors and their way of life, it was a struggle. It wasn't anything. I mean, it wasn't bliss. It wasn't that everything was there for them and life was good. There was a lot of hardships. They had to exist within wild places. And as beautiful and as magical as nature is not by any means mild. It is sometimes very, very harsh. But within that is balance. But our ancestors grew within that environment. They knew and they learned from the environment, so they became part of the environment. They became part of the hoop. Whereas today, it's like you were talking about with agriculture. You know, what pushed the agriculture to the point to where it is today is, like you said, money. Because the commodities market is what supply and demand started to determine who got food and who didn't. The price of goods is what started to determine who got to eat and who didn't. And this was implemented just for money's purpose. Back when our ancestors existed, their struggles were with the environment, but their spiritual, their internal workings, their internal face, their mind, their beliefs, their system of living was in harmony.
Yeah.
Now, today, we have the exact opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
We have people who want to live for comfort, of the existential world of the outside, and there's no comfort on the inside. So things have been reversed. So things get more wappy-catus as we go. We're more willing to allow this system, this machine, to dictate our comforts for us because, hey, well, it feels good, you know, and I can go to Walmart, and Walmart has everything I need, and it's cheap. Why not? But you don't think about, well, let's see, the tennis shoes, they come from that factory in Indonesia where those six-year-old kids are working and tied to their machines.
Yeah.
Right, and this food comes from South America where they're sprayed with chemicals and stuff. That's why it's, we don't think about that. And so we go and we think that we're living better, you know, well, this is all, you know, look at all the vegetables, look at all of these things that we can buy here.
We have abundance, but we don't look at the source of that abundance,
Exactly.
Well, that's the disconnect, you see. That's what we've been talking about for, I don't know how many years, the disconnect from people, from reality, and also from nature, you know. And I think part of the plan was definitely to separate us from nature, from the food, you know, too. So you have big corporations coming in, and everybody's saying, oh, all I have to do is, you know, make some more money, get two jobs now so I can buy those carrots or I can buy those broccolis or lettuces or sneakers like you're talking about or whatever. But how does this happen? Well, then we have the advancement of the technology where we, you know, we have these mainstream media, we have the advertisements, we have the movies, we have Hollywood, we have all this stuff, magazines that are pushing these so-called wonderful things, you know, that buy this, buy that, you will be happy when you buy this and buy that, you know, this will make your life wonderful, you'll be like the rich people, you'll be like, you know, whatever, everything will be wonderful. And this is indoctrination. This is how I see it. It's separate, indoctrinate the people to separate from their true nature and nature itself, you know. I mean, do you remember, well, World War II, of course, which was another debacle of the corporate war machine. But about the gardens, what they would call, everybody had a garden, right? Do you remember that?
Yes.
So, you know, everybody did get back to gardening, okay? Because there was, you know, food was scarce. Things weren't moving so easily and so on around the country. And you had this, everybody decided, well, let's make our garden and feed ourselves. Well, they did it. Didn't they?
Well, and they fed their neighbors. You know,
and they fed their
That's the difference, too. You know, I'm going to tell you something that happened Friday morning here at my house. My daughter is staying with me. I've often talked about how I grew up and my father would send me across the road when he'd see homeless people. And he was working at a shop and he'd send me over there to get them and bring them over and feed them, you know, and he'd give them jobs and stuff. Well, I've told those stories to my children enough times, and they've seen me act out in kindness enough times. Well, Friday morning, I woke up really early, and I heard voices, and Mark says, "Do you hear somebody in there?" And I said, it was probably just Jessica and Matt. Well, a little bit later, Jessica comes in, and she tells me that there was she was coming down the road, and it's really cold here. I mean, we're dealing with, I think last time it was like 18 degrees, and the night before it was 28. So it was bad weather, and she was coming home, and there was a man in his mid-30s, I would say, that she had seen walking on the side of the road, and it was so very, very cold. And so she had this thing in the back of her head that said, "Turn around." So she turned around, and she went looking for him. She couldn't find him, and then she saw this huddle on the ground, and it was him. And she asked him if he needed a ride. And he said yes, that he had been walking from Wichita, and because of the weather and the cold, it had taken him 2 days.
Wow.
And, yeah, so she brought him home here, brought him in, went and got him clothes, went and got him some food and stuff, and put it in his backpack, and then talked to him for a while and found out he had a brother that was living in an apartment here where we are in Wellington, and she took him there. This doesn't happen anymore.
No,
and she told me that, and I felt so
beautiful,
honored.
That's
yeah.
beautiful. That's yeah. what we're talking about. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, it's funny. There's this guy. I live up on a mountain here, and down below, as the mountain goes down and down and down to the flat areas, and you get on the main highway. But there's this old guy who's always walking on the road in all kinds of weather. I mean, bitter cold weather, rain, whatever, and he's always bundled up, but he's got a cane, he's walking up, and then he goes to the little store, so I'd say it's about, you know, a good long, pretty long way down that mountain, then you gotta walk him back up the mountain, and every once in a while, you know, in the past, I'd pick him up, you know, and give him a ride up the hill. He's like in, I don't know, 78 or something, he's got 25 grandchildren, he's from the islands, you know, and anyway, last month I was in a hurry, and I'm going down the road, and well, there he is. He's heading in the direction I'm heading. I think, well, he's going to that little store down there. But I was in a hurry, so I whipped by him, and I thought, oh, I should have picked him up. It's really bitter cold that I should have picked him up. But then I'm, yeah, stop at the stop sign. I take my left, and I go on, and I'm thinking, God, I should have picked him up. You know, so I went to the store. I went about 2-3 miles away, went to the main stores, and on my way back, he's heading up, going back now up the mountain. And I whipped past him, and all of a sudden I thought, well, actually, on the way to the stores, I was thinking, suppose that was Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, it was funny because it came into my mind. Suppose that was a holy man. Suppose that was an angel. Suppose that was one of your ancestors came back. And I went through that. So funny, right? So anyway, when I came back, I was going pretty fast. I passed him by. Well, I stopped the car and I backed up. And I, and I got him into the car and took him up the mountain. But it was like that little thought. Suppose he was a holy man. Suppose he was, one of the ancestors just, you know, walking on the road, and what are you going to do about that? I'm just saying.
Yeah. You know,
but that's a beautiful story, sis. That's beautiful because my mother was like that. You know, my mother always was helping the underdog. She always went out of her way. I grew up like that. I saw her do things for people, go out of her way, help people, strangers, and various other things. And she was always there to help someone who had less, or what we call, I guess, in today's time, the underdog, right? And that's beautiful.
When I was a kid, the women of my family were the peacemakers. The elders of my family were the people with the wisdom that you go to when you had a problem, and we seemed to get what it meant to be a family. And I seen my family go out of their way lots of times to help a lot of people, even though they didn't necessarily have it to give. They understood what it was like. My grandma and my grandfather, they both lived through the Depression. They seen what it was like. And so I'm sure that you have similar stories, Barbara. You know,
yeah.
We live in a different world today that, you know, everything is so, you know, readily accessible. You can go to the store. You can buy food, you know, right off the counter. You know, nobody really has to get out there and get their hands dirty and really realize what it's like. If you don't have the money, the government will step in and give you money to buy food and stuff like that, which sounds wonderful. I mean, yeah, I would love to see that everybody's cared for, but it comes at a price. It comes at a terrible price.
And it's such a wonderful system, Shaziz. How come there are so many homeless?
Yeah.
How come there are so many veterans right now that are living in the streets and in the gutters, you know, in the alleyways? How come there are laws being passed to where it is, you can be fined and put in jail if you feed someone who doesn't have a home?
Yeah.
Why? If this is true, you know, then if we live in such a society, in such a system that is so, advanced, then how come we have people who go without their basic needs? And I'm not talking about, oh, everything should be free. I'm not saying that. Nothing. We can't live in a system where everything is free when somebody has to pay for it. Now, if everything was free for everybody and nobody had to pay for anything, I would be all for it. To me, that's a system that works. But nobody wants to do that. Everybody's got to make a profit for some reason. There's got to be money involved. But since we are in this system that that does require money to be able to feed people, then we are stuck with either doing one of two things: ignoring those people who are in need, or giving what little we do have to whoever doesn't have, starting to reach out as people to people instead of society turning its back because, hey, I got my little bit, but I can't afford to give you a little bit of my little bit. You know, it's about time that we all realize that we're in this together, and that when we have people who are suffering, when we have people who are doing without, that it's time to start a new think. That it is time to look and see, without the rose-colored glasses on, that we are suffering. Yeah. If we can allow this to happen, there is something wrong, terribly wrong, with our psyche. And it's going to damage us. You know, we're going to become so cold and so uncaring that even our children will suffer underneath us. And look, it's actually happening.
Yep.
You know?
Sure is. You know, I keep saying this, it just blows my doors off how people don't seem to, you know, be able to grasp the concept about how we all need to work together on things. If you think about what something you just said about giving a little bit of your piece to somebody else, you know, if every single person in this world outside of the elitist system had only $1 in their hand, that's a lot of power. That's a lot of financial power. And so if they could figure out a way to take that one bit of financial power and use it, you know, not to take down the system, but to uplift those in the community that need a home or need food or stuff like that, we could resolve some things so quickly with that kind of financial power. You know, and it's not all about money. It's definitely money's a big problem, but because we're stuck in this system, like, I'm working on alternative energy. I'm working on trying to get my lab done. I'm not out trying to panhandle or ask or beg or request that anybody give me any money to further my deal. You know, I know what I'm doing, and I'm doing it for honorable intentions. But I'm not out trying to get anybody to pay for it for me. However, if we had the drive and wanted to, I would take hundreds of dollars out of my pocket and put it into that pile if I knew that it was going to go for the cause of uplifting somebody. If it was going to go for, you know, like, they got all kinds of corporations for all kinds of different companies and stuff like that. If we had a people's corporation where we, the people, we put our resources down, you know, it's like here in the United States, When we feel like we got to take care of something, we can bring our armies to bear. We can bring all of our machines, our medicine, our equipment, our people together. We can rally the troops, and we can go over there and we can get something done. Now, why isn't it that we, the people, couldn't do that same thing? Because our combined net value is probably way off the scale of what even the best elitist out there got. You know, by ourselves, we're just one piece of the puzzle. Each one of us only got a dollar in our pocket, but we're so fearful of taking that dollar out of our pocket and putting it in the hands of the rest of the people together with that pile, because if I give you this dollar, I've got nothing. You see what I'm trying to say here?
That's why I'm saying that we need a new think. We need to look at life in a totally different way than we've been taught to look at life. We've been taught that life is about scarcity, that life is about dog eat dog, that if you don't perform, that you will suffer. And it's true. This is the way the system is built. But we don't have to engage the system on its terms. If you look at my situation here, me and Mark, we have medical issues that are really quite sometimes quite serious. And we are not able to do the things that we need to do to even care for ourselves sometimes. And it's our children are grown with families and things like this. There was a time when me and Mark were in dire straits because we were really ill and we had no way, you know, I couldn't even cook meals at the time and stuff. So we had finances, but we still couldn't afford to hire someone through the system that could come in and take care of us. But we have a friend, an adopted, he's been adopted, it's in what we call our tribe here, who he takes care of us. He cooks for us. He does the things. He helps Mark with getting to his appointments and getting to his therapies and things like this. He is essential to this family. And what he does is he provides that missing link. And what we do is we provide him with his missing link that he needs. And that includes his medical care and things like this. This is how this works.
That's a prime example.
The ability to provide. Right. This is the way it should work. And this is, there are so many elders out here that are living on their own that need care. And there are so many people who are also struggling because they can't survive in this system who could benefit. They could benefit from each other.
Yep.
But nobody's doing this, you know. We do have a way out. We don't have to depend on this system. Matt is a blessing. Matt is truly, Creator sent him, you know. And we are grateful every single day that he is part of our lives. And he's part of the family. I will fight to the death for him, you know.
That's why I say I wish that people could see through your eyes, through Barbara's eyes, through Barry's eyes, through all these people and People for People. I love the name People for People. It says it all. If you go down and if you're on a Super chat room, you scroll down and you look at that banner that they got down there for their deal. I mean, it says it all. Folks, if you get a chance to and you're visiting Shaziz Radio, go over and visit them as well, because if the world could see through our eyes what you just explained, Patty, that is the answer. That is the solution. I mean,
I want to talk to that, sis, because and Shaz, because what you just described is, in our tradition, it is like a spiritual adoption, we call it. It's a ceremony. I mean, we go through a ceremony, actually. It's called the making of relatives ceremony. And it's very serious. I mean, I take it very serious. Our people took it very seriously. You know, you adopt someone through a ceremony into your family. They become your family. This is very real. You know, it's not
no different than your own blood.
That's right. And so I take it very seriously, and I know you do as well, and our people did. It's sort of like that is your child or your uncle or your whatever it is, however you're adopting them. It doesn't have to be a child. It could be an adult person. But you make that commitment to each other that is your family, you know, and that's a beautiful thing in the Indian way. You know, whereas sometimes when there was a loss of life of someone in your family, you know, and sometimes in the case where that person lost their life, that person who was responsible for that life would often be taken into the Indian family as adopted. That was a case of a quite a few years ago where this young man was actually my relative and my teacher, Wallace Black Elk. His nephew died. He was going for a simple operation and he died of complications, and he had a very close friend, a young man who they were very close and bonded together. Well, the father and the mother of grandfather's nephew adopted this other fellow who was very close to their son. They adopted him to be part of their family because he was so close to their son. And that was very real, you know. And I've done that here. I'm living here on this land, 103 acres, that was my dream vision, given to me over 15 years ago by Spirit, to find land, to start community and have your, you know, your gardens and the waters and everything, and start to build community. This couple came into my life, you know, about 9 years ago. She found me and started coming into my teaching circles and so on. And all things by Spirit's workings fell into place where they were very interested and wanted to be a part of the community, and we all looked for land together, and this land came to us, and the money fell right in our hands. Like, Spirit allowed that right in that moment to be able to purchase this land. Well, we did an adoption, a spiritual adoption, in front of the sacred fire and the chinumpa, the sacred pipe and everything, and she's my daughter. I call her my daughter, and he, you know, of course, he's my son, and their children are my grandchildren, and we're one family here, and we're living in, on this land together, and we help each other, you know, and it's interesting because sometimes these adoptive, this way we adopt others, we're closer to them than sometimes our own blood family. That's how it works. Not always, but that's how sometimes it works. But, you know, it's like, this is a beautiful thing. I was saying a couple of weeks ago about we have solutions. We talk about them all the time. And one of the solutions, if, like, you're really upset and worried and in fear and concerned about what's happening in the world, step out your door and go meet your neighbors. Start something in the community. You know, come together. Build a little garden together, you know, or see, well, I have, you know, like, I have this ability to fix electrical problems, or I'm a plumber or something, and, you know, what do you do? What can you help with? Let's pool our resources and help each other in the community. That's where you need to start. Yeah. You know, that's what I'm saying.
Well, that's basic concept of the whole thing. I mean, everything you two ladies have just explained, all the things we've been talking about for years right there. The answer's simple. The fact of the matter is, money can't fix the problems that we have. I mean, you know, granted, in the system, it takes money to do things. I get that. But it's not the ultimate power. It's not the miracle. The miracle is what you just explained, what Patty just explained. That is what, you know, one day I was out at a restaurant with my daughter. Her and I, we got an opportunity to go out to lunch or breakfast together. I don't remember which one it was. Nonetheless, we was out having a meal together. And I was sitting there, and I saw this elderly couple sit down at a table across from us. And I watched how their meal was delivered to them. And before they had their meal, they put their hands together, and they were giving thanks for, you know, their meal before they had it. Well, this put, you know, an energy in my heart where I just felt like I need to do something really, really kind, but I don't want credit for it, so I got to figure out a creative way to do this, and I want my daughter to witness this whole process. So when my waitress came over, I asked her, I said, I want to pay for that couple's meal over there, but I want you to wait till I'm out this door before you tell them that their meal's paid for. And so she recruited the busboy with it, and so I gave her the money for the deal. She let me know what the check was, plus I also threw a tip in there. And as me and my daughters walking out, I seen them go over there, and I seen the look on these people's faces as I was walking past the window, and it was the most amazing feeling. But what made it even better was the look on my daughter's face. And I told my daughter, I said, you know, there were six people involved in a miracle just now. I said, you and I, mm-hmm. the waitress and the waiter, and these two people over there. For all I know, this could have been their money that they needed to buy medicine or something like that. It's regardless of all that.
Well, it's the act that counts. It's just that they could have been wealthy people. It doesn't matter.
The greatest gift was when I looked at my daughter's eyes and she saw her father She really saw me. She saw my heart.
You know the thing that really proves it out is, and it's still going on today. It's seasonal. People do it during the Christmas season, but hey, they do it. But it's like the drive up, pay for the guy behind you thing, that has started going. I mean, this is wonderful to me, that people will step out of themselves and their own little world of worry and the benefit that they glean from spending money on somebody else, that they will not see anything from that. They're giving their money. What they're actually doing is they're taking their hard-earned money and they're giving it away, not to see a return, a physical return from it. And they're driving
an act
off.
Of kindness.
Well, those two people will
but
never.
But what they're driving off with, But what they're driving off with is something that sticks with them.
Yep.
In their heart, in their mind, and uplifts them, and it those struggles that they have during the holidays are not as bad anymore, and it's passed on from people to people. Yeah. Everybody, I think, is they have the ability to feel this and to be this is our true being. This is who we truly are.
Yep. Those two people will never ever know who did that for them, but they will know that somebody, some other people in this world did something. And so if that isn't a little bit of hope for humanity, that's what I love the most about this thing.
Well, there was this movie called Pass It Forward. Was that like that? I didn't see the movie, but I think it was about that.
Pay It Forward.
Pay It Forward, yeah. I mean,
I think that's what started it, huh? I'm not sure.
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I pulled up a couple years ago. I pulled up to the pay my toll to go over the bridge, and the woman said, "Oh, you're already paid for that car up there. They paid." So I said, "Well, here's the money. Here's my money anyway. Pay the guy behind me."
That's cool.
You know, it's
man,
like
and that wave, that ripple. I would love to know. I keep saying this. I know it sounds crazy, but wouldn't it be so wonderful to smile at somebody and be able to follow that smile to see how far it actually traveled? To be able to see when you paid for the person behind you, how far back that actually went.
Exactly. Well, it's just it's that seed. It's that pebble in the pond, you know, and that's what we're all about. You know, everything that we do affects the greater whole, everything, either positive or negative, and we have it in our hands to choose to do something like that. $1.50 is not a lot of money, you know, really, to just pay it forward, you know. But what it is on a deeper level to me, it's that relationship. It's a connectedness to a person's, I don't even know who they are. That person who paid for my bridge fee, I don't know who they are. But we have there's this energetic connection now. This feels good. It's a beautiful feeling, you know, and that's what this is all about. It's about our relationship to each other, something far greater than we could ever imagine. And with just these little tiny pieces of kindness, it tells us, you know, you're a human being, you're one of my people here, we're all in this together, you know?
It's good for the spirit.
It's very good for the spirit. Yeah, feeding the soul. It's beautiful. This is why I keep saying it's in our hands and we have more power than we could ever imagine. Simple kindnesses like these, just reaching out for someone like your daughter did. I mean, that's pretty extraordinary what she did, sis.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And you know, when the guy got in the car, she asked him. She said, "You're not gonna kill me, are you?" "No. I thanked her and everything." She said, "Well, you don't know if I'm gonna kill you." But, yeah. You know,
oh,
and they kind of laughed about it.
But you know, you gotta laugh. But isn't this a sad thing? A sad thing that? I mean, once upon a time, we never locked our doors, you know. We never locked our cars. Huh? Yeah.
I still don't.
We don't either, but I'm just saying, nowadays people are building fences and walls and securities and, you know, what is
that? Well, you know what the beautiful thing, too, is she got to hear his story.
Yeah.
Which, to me, you know, Barb, that's what it's always been about me. I want to hear the stories because that's when you hear about the life, you know, and that's the heart of the matter. And she got to hear his story. And that's what, you know, she took away from that was the beauty of even though he suffered, you know, even though he's had to deal with the harshness that life can give you, he still had joy. He still had laughter. He still had a story to give. And that's the most beautiful part of it. And
now she gave him another part of the story.
It's the little things in life that make so much of a big difference. I gotta give a shout out to a company out there. There's a drone. My wife bought me a little toy drone for Christmas. It's a Swift Stream glow in the dark camera drone. And the very first day I had it, I basically crashed it into a tree and basically risked my life trying to get it out of the tree. But whenever I got the thing down, I went to try to fly it again later, and there was a gear stripped out in it from, I guess, when it hit the tree. And so, you know, I get on a package, and I find the phone number, and I call this company up. And I talk to this guy who sounded like he was from India, but really nice guy. And so I was asking him about this part. I was digging in my wallet to get my credit card out so that I could, you know, pay for him. I gave him all my information. And then he turns around and he says, "We're going to send you this part for free." And I was like, wow, thank you very much. And before I even got a chance to thank him for it, he already took off. He already solved my problem. He's going to send me the part in the mail. It's coming from New York. But the way that he delivered that message to me wasn't, you know, like, hurry up, get me away from me. He just did it as nice, as kind as possible. I mean, I didn't even have to argue with him or, you know, explain that I'm the one that broke it. I did break it. I crashed it. But I just thought that was pretty cool that somebody from a business like that would actually, you know, have that kind of personal, you know, care about somebody they never even met before and didn't charge me for it. They could have charged me for it. They, you know, but to me, it's something as little as that is so incredible. So yeah, you guys,
well, all these stories just again should give us all hope, because we do have something inside of us. It's our human nature, and I think that it is innate within us, and sometimes it's covered up, deeply hidden, you know. But I think, like I said earlier, when there's a disaster, it seems like people come out of the woodwork and they just lend a hand and they pitch in and they, you know, and then they all, when it's done, they all go back to their little corners, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a part of our human nature, and I'm supposing that there are some still who are not in touch with that and they just can't reach out, you know, they're unable to reach out, or they're just too preoccupied or stuck in this system that prevents them from reaching out, you know, and that's like fear and the survival, you know, they're trying to survive and they're worried or they're fearful. When people are in that state, which I think is an indoctrination, a deliberate indoctrination, is to get people into fear so they don't reach out. They're all about themselves. I have to take care of myself, you know. Well, we do have to take care of ourselves. We have to start within our own self and then our family, our immediate family. But let's not stop there, you know. Let's continue out to the community, out to the neighborhood, you know. And that's like that pebble in the pond. You throw it in the pond and it goes out in ripples and waves. And those persons that you reached out to, they're going to have that story, you know, like that fella that your daughter helped. He's now, that's added to his story.
Yeah,
you know,
amazing.
And you can't, yeah, and you can't gauge the benefit to someone by what, like her bringing that gentleman home and giving him a coat and giving him shoes and clothing and some food and stuff. You cannot gauge, because It didn't cost us anything to give him that shirt, those shoes, and pennies. You know.
Well, you know,
but the benefit to him, was twice as much as what the benefit was to ours. We had the we fed our spirit. My daughter fed her spirit. Yeah. She did the right thing, and but to him, not only was his spirit fed, but he was given what he needed and his faith in life and in humanity.
Right.
You know,
we
this is what's it's still with him.
Gaz just popped this in. He says, most touching thing recently that took place in my life is all the love and care Jackie and myself received from all the family from these circles. Thank you all.
Oh man, that is awesome. That's a blessing. Look, a lot of people don't want to admit it, but we are all literally emotionally connected. I mean, if you see somebody crying, you know, you feel it. You actually feel it. If you see somebody smiling, you feel it, and you want to smile too. One of the most amazing things that I felt here recently was I was at a Chiefs game with my brother that I probably might not ever see again. I mean, we're getting old and he don't come around very often, but I got to go there with him. I got to go there with my little brother and family and stuff like that. And as I was sitting there watching it, even though it's just a football game, and I looked at how many people actually came there together, and I could feel that energy of that crowd. And when they, my brother, because of my uncle had season passes to this thing, he was fortunate enough to be able to go down and do this flag ceremony on the actual field itself. And as they were doing this flag ceremony, the U.S. Air Force did a flyby with one of their jets, and you know, all this stuff combined. And then when the pilots of that plane finally came around and they came on the field to introduce the pilots and the crew of the people who did that flyby before this actual game started, that feeling of all those people coming together is the most amazing power that I've ever felt in my entire life. It brought me to tears. It brought me to tears to think about all the soldiers out there, all the veterans, all the people that make everything possible on a daily basis. I wish that somehow or another, I must be turning into a mushball, because I see these things on TV where, you know, all these people come together for whether it be a candlelight vigil or some sort of big thing that they have to overcome, and they all come together and they do that, and it brings tears of joy to my eyes, because it to me is the greatest power and the best hope for humanity for people to realize that. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I feel the same way. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I really love people. I'm very intrigued by people. I want to know the story of the persons. I'm not looking at what they're wearing or what the color of their skin or their background. I just am very intrigued by people. I know everyone has a story, and I really, oftentimes I will just start talking to someone, you know, just to be in that conversation, in that relationship, you know.
Yeah.
I'll go into the store, you know, and I notice everybody in the store got those frowns on their faces, or they're concerned, or they're in their own world, and I'll just stand there and I'll just wait for them to look up, because it's probably like they're probably feeling something that they don't really know. But they'll look up, and they'll look right at me, and I give them a big smile.
See?
And I like to do that, because I like people, and I also know you could just kind of see they're stuck somewhere, you know, or they're dealing with something, and I just want to give them a smile. And most of the people smile back. Some of them have a little stunned look on their face at first, but they'll smile back.
Yep. That's that emotional connection. I mean, if you want to test the theory, go into a room with a mean look on your face while everybody's laughing and just stand there and look mean. Everybody be wondering what's going on. Do the same thing. You know, go in there, smile. You know, you'll find it spreads.
You'll be surprised what you that you have, every one of us have, to change somebody's life with just a simple act of kindness, just a smile, or just even holding a door for somebody, or even, you know, whatever it is, you know, paying it forward. We have that ability. It will, like we're talking about, there's a ripple effect, you know. Then that person has a story.
Yep.
Oh, the story, you know, I pulled up to this place and somebody paid for my gas or somebody paid for my dinner. Can you believe that? You know?
Yep.
And that story goes on. And then somebody else might be so touched by that and they'll say, hey, you know what? That's a great idea. I'm going to do that too.
Yep. It's an amazing thing.
Well, you know, it's like my daughter, you know, about 3 weeks ago, she got dressed and ready to go to the store, and she'd come in the room, and I looked at her, and she's got this fake mustache, big bushy thing. She's got it stuck on her, right? She's got a cowboy hat on and some cowboy boots.
Your daughter's so pretty cool.
Yeah, she heads out to the store, you know, and I thought, you know, somebody's going to have stories to tell, because my daughter decided that she was going to give people something to smile about, and that's my daughter. You know, she'll walk out of here with a square SpongeBob SquarePants big old gaudy hat with winter hat that the ear things come way down and got these tassels and stuff. She just goes out. She wants people to smile. She wants people to be happy.
Patty, looking at your picture on here on Skype, I got a feeling that I know where she got that from.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. I'm a big cut up, or I used to be in my younger days. But and me and Betsy, my best friend Betsy, we do the same thing. We go out today and we'll get in a store or something. I used to tell Betsy all the time, I'm not going to take you out unless you behave, you know. Because we go out and just cut up, and it's like me going through the everything's a dollar store and grabbing something and running up to the register. How much is this? So the lady got aggravated with me, you know.
Yeah,
stuff
right.
Like that. just for the smiles, you know.
That's too funny. I'm gonna have to try that. We got some dollar stores around here. Can I get a price check?
Yeah, they get
that?
Activated after about the fifth or sixth time, though. It's funny for the first couple of times.
Yep. Oh, wow. What a wonderful show today. I tell you, this is just amazing. You know, folks, I'm telling you right now, money can't fix the problems that we got going on in this world. You know, the system, look, I'm not naive. I understand it takes money to do things. But if you think about our combined resources, just take the money completely out of the equation. You just take that simple smile or that simple kind act, and you magnify that times the numbers of just the people that's in People for People and Shaziz chat room. Just those people alone. They say there's like 6 degrees of separation. We know people through 6 other people. We know these other people. So it's a small world after all. Imagine what would happen if each one of us chose a day that all of us on that specific day were going to go out, and no matter what was going on, we were going to smile at everybody at whatever cost it takes. We're just going to keep on smiling and send instead of a ripple, send a massive wave of that smile out over this world. I think that would be so profound.
Well, you know, there is this old adage that says if you're feeling miserable and if you're not having a good day, or you feel like your life is empty, go out and volunteer.
Yeah.
Go out and volunteer. Lend a hand. It will change your life. That's what we're talking about, right? Reaching out, changing your own experience, and it will change your life. Go out and volunteer. And or like I'm saying, like reach out to your neighbors. Suggest you're gonna have a let's have a community garden. You know, people are doing that. You know, do you need any help? I have this skill.
I had the honor a while back to it's probably several, many many years ago, probably at least 10 years at least, at the very least. But I had the honor to go out there and help with the Harvester program. Harvester program, in case you all don't know, over here is basically they'll bring like food to different places, churches, or whatever, and they will equally distribute it out to all the people out there. I'm not saying that there ain't some corruption involved in that system. There are greedy people in this world, but the whole entire concept and how it comes about is pretty impressive, and it helps a lot of people. But I had the honor and pleasure of being able to go out there and just carry groceries for folks, you know, elderly couples that were, you know, on walkers or canes, or, you know, just some young lady that had a baby in her arms or something like that. I got to carry those groceries to their vehicles for them. And, you know, the gratitude, the love that you feel when you're doing that is just, it's just amazing. You know, I'm just there doing a job, but I'm trying to help people out that way. But when you see these people come there, and a lot of times you can tell it makes a difference, because they might be short on money, you know, or there might be something going on in their life to where they can't afford to, you know, go out and buy groceries on their own. But this program that they do, it helps feed people. And it don't matter if it's a working family. It don't matter if it's a family that lives in a really nice house. Even those families are finding themselves in a position where they're short on food because they've extended themselves so far, but it even helps those folks as well. I've got a friend that every so often, he'll go to these different things and he will bring my family food. And, you know, we're not starving. But there are times whenever, because of, you know, utility bills or unforeseen circumstances, cars breaking down, that it just so happens that somehow or another, this man and his family show up at our doorstep just at the right doggone time. It's amazing. You know, people will surprise you. They will amaze you if you give them the opportunity to. And that kind of thing, it spreads, because it makes us want to go out and do something kind for somebody else. I mean, we're kind-hearted people. That's the kind of family that I was raised in. That's the kind of family that we raise as you know, the new elders of our group or whatever. And we try to share that with our kids. We go out, we try to do things in our community to help other people, you know, whatever. I'm not trying to toot our horn. I'm just trying to say that that mindset, the pay it forward thing, and, you know, even these wonderful things that Buzz keeps throwing in the chat room. He writes a lot of good words. So it's just amazing. The wonderful comments that comes over there in People for People chat room, it's just amazing. All these things combined. I mean, it. I don't know if my heart could get any bigger at this point in the game. You know, I'm just so incredibly excited, just humbled and blessed. I'm just so thankful for what we do here. It just amazes me. And I want other people in the world to experience. I want them to experience what we do here as a family. The things that...
Well, I think that... Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's because we're here because we have something inside us. We have hope and a belief. And we know miracles have happened and can happen, you know. And I think the hope and the faith are a combination that I think we all have, you know. We don't feel hopeless. We don't feel helpless because we know there are solutions and you know, we have this connectedness to some source that is far greater than ourselves, I believe. And I think that's a key piece. And I know people have lost their way, like we've talked about this Garden of Eden and how it was, I think, deliberately corrupted to become where we are today, where people are reliant and dependent upon the system, which is corrupt, where they've disconnected or been disconnected from their own source, the land, the earth, their own human nature or innate nature as a sacred being, and also as this beautiful creation. You know, I mean, people are so disconnected, and I think that was done deliberately. So you and I, you know, Patty and I, myself and you, Shaz and Barry and others, we have this connectedness, and it's very powerful and beautiful. And I know there are others too, but I also see some of our brothers and sisters who are very disconnected and in despair, you know, and I think that's an agenda. I mean, when you're in despair, you will look for solution, I guess, in all the wrong places, or let's say the problem reaction solution overruns you, overrules you, and take, you know, basically leads you into a deeper despair and into acts that are not reaching out to others, but creates this division, you know, the division rather, this disunity is what we're talking about, right?
Yep, they know how powerful we are. They really honestly know it, and that's the thing that I believe that the system really seriously fears, the fact that we'll figure that out. The moment we figure that out, I mean, we've sat here and explained it just fractions of what we're capable of as far as the miracles, the power of the spoken word, the power of our actions. Imagine what would happen if we all came together in that heart and that mindset. There would be no stopping. There would be no stopping that power. Absolutely no way. I mean, I keep saying about the dark, you know, you go into a cave and it's pitch dark in there. You light one candle, that dark spreads out. You know, you go in there like 2, 3, 4 candles, and eventually that dark gets beat back. You turn that light on that's inside of your heart right there, you let that shine, then there ain't no darkness in the world that can overcome what our Creator put in our souls, our spirits. It's so amazing, and I think that is the message that we need to learn. That is the lesson of this life that we need to learn. You know, it's not about one of us. It's about all of us. And every time we lose one of us, we lose a big piece of all of us. That Swiss watch,
right?
It's fancy. That Swiss watch, or even that doggone Rolex you got, it's fancy. But you take one of those gears out, it don't work.
Guess what we're saying is that nothing is hopeless, and we aren't helpless, and I know a lot of people are suffering out there, and it's easy for us to say, but you know, I think one key piece that I like to talk about is the indoctrination, the deliberate disconnect from nature. And I know, for me personally, you know, and I know you guys say the same thing, that it is nature that heals me. It is you know, being out there. Connectedness and just sitting in, well, I can go out in such a low place, you know, really struggling, and I can just go out. I take myself out, and I might sit by the water or just sit out by a tree or wherever. It's just out there on the mother, and something starts to change. Something starts to shift, you know. I could be just bawling my eyes out or doing whatever, and suddenly I just, you know, there's something energetically that's happening outside on the Mother Earth, you know. And of course we are, that's part of our nature. We are related to nature and the Mother and all of life. So when we go out there, something starts to happen. I've experienced joy when I've gone out there in despair. I will just suddenly be overwhelmed and overtaken by the beauty of the Mother, the beauty of everything out there, and it just uplifts me and gives me something. It gives me that hope and that connectedness once again, because it's the disconnect that is the despairing aspect that we're talking about here. And so many people have been indoctrinated to disconnect from this source, even from the Mother, from the beauty and the miracles that are there. So it's just, to me, it's a healing waiting for you outside the door. That's what I say. If you're feeling down, if you're feeling despairing, you might say, well, nothing's going to fix my problems. There's nothing in the world that can fix my problems, you know, and that's it. But I just have to say it again. If you go outside and spend some time outside, something will shift inside of you. Yes, your problem may still remain, but something fills you. Something will shift you, you know, and uplift you. It's an entirely different experience. I'm not saying poof, all of your problems will go away, but it will give you a sense of something far greater, an inner peace, and maybe even just that miracle might happen. Just saying.
And don't expect don't expect the world to change. Expect yourself to do what it is that you desire. If you want peace, then bring peace. That's where you're going to find it. We don't believe in ourselves anymore. And maybe that's a big key of what is missing, is that we put our faith in the falsities of this illusion, instead of in the truth of who and where we come from and who we truly are together, part of the hoop, part of the circle of life. Maybe it's time that we started putting that faith back in to our place within the hoop and what we bring in that positive effect of being part of instead of apart from. That's where we've been for so long. And I think we've kind of lost sight of the fact that we're the ones that bring the magic. When I talk about experiencing the magic of life, whatever that was, I don't know what that was. But
together we are the dream team.
There you go. Yes, yes. Ow! Where's Lizzie with her ow?
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
But, you know, yeah, it's about us and what we bring. The more we bring, the better life is and the more magic that is, you know, just saying.
Yep. Oh, man. This is amazing. I'm just happy. Today's a happy day. It's snowing outside. We got all that global warming everywhere.
Global warming here. We got 60-degree weather here. Yesterday was almost 60 degrees. We're in the middle of a winter here, and this is a cold part of the country, normally. And so we were having even some honeybees out yesterday. And
would you like to try?
Yeah, you know. Things are skewed here. Things are a little off. We'll be heading back for some. We need
things
a cold.
Are normal here.
Would you like to trade?
No.
Normal for us here.
We can
January,
barter.
February,
I'll give you
the coldest. But.
I'll give you a truckload of snow for a box of heat.
It's kind of skewed here, and things are shifting and all that. And so, but it's, I don't. I'm not saying there's global warming. You know, I don't advocate that belief because I think things are shifting and changing. You have nature is shifting and changing, but there's something else going on too. And I'm not saying that. I guess what I really want to say is that we do
have
a
cycle.
It's a cycle, but we also, as consumers, of persons here, we need to kind of like be a little more awake about how we consume. Because, you know, if you didn't consume a lot of products, you know, then they wouldn't be taking down the forest. Or, well, you know, if we all stood out on the streets and say, bring back hemp, rather than, you know, I hate this one or I hate that one. I mean, there are solutions. Hemp in itself is a solution, but then again, we're looking at the system. The system has deliberately corrupted these natural products. Like,
did you hear? You just reminded me something, sis. I got to bring this out. I read this. There was a big bust. The authorities were so impressed at the big bust that they had somewhere here in the States. I can't remember. I think it was in the east, one of the eastern states. It was like something like 2,200 pounds or something or other that of marijuana, and they were so impressed, and they put pictures out there and everything of all of it laid out, and the guy, the officers with their guns and everything standing there proud, and then they found out it was hemp.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, that sure took the wind out of their sails, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
But I'm just saying, so here we have, like we're talking about, there are solutions, and unfortunately, the authoritarian system has made sure that these solutions are kept from us or not allowed, you know, like this stupid, you know, raid you just talked about. You know, I've also heard stories about where people are growing tomatoes in their basement, and and you know, winterize whatever, and then police raid comes and they're thinking they got marijuana, but they're actually tomato plants.
Well, when it comes down to the medical industry, I feel like sometimes it's like beating a dead horse, but at the same sense, it's a necessary discussion, because there are literal cures out there for so many ailments that the mainstream medical industry will not entertain. They will not look into it. They have their set of rules. They have their set of pharmaceuticals that they want to sell, and so on down the line. And quite literally, as far as I'm concerned, and you know, you can call it my opinion or not, I don't care, but quite literally, as far as I'm concerned, the mainstream medical industry has literally turned into butchers. They do this chemotherapy to people, and no matter how many times you try to tell somebody about alternatives such as hyperbaric oxygen treatment, really, seriously, take a look into it. Look at the testimonials. A man that had gangrene in his foot. They were going to amputate his foot. They tried this process. They healed his foot. They saved his foot. These are processes that have been proven, most of which are based off of, you know, natural cures and such. You know,
yeah, I know somebody who did that. They had lymphoma, and she went through the... I told this before, but I think it's worth telling again. She had lymphoma, and she went through the chemo. She went through all the radiation, and she nearly died from it. She did survive it, but then 4 years later, the lymphoma returned, and she decided to go all natural, and she did that. Many other things, too, aside from that, but she's fine. She did heal through this, and I've heard so many stories of... But what we're talking about is, again, it's nature's medicines, you see, and now the system, of course, has indoctrinated people's mind and controlling their minds, that they believe only in the medical system, and the medical system is threatening and telling them, we have the answer, we have the solution, but they're, you know, basically it's a big money. We're talking about money here. Again, they're back to greed.
Well, and out of fear, those people will continue to go back to the same doctors that are trying to sell them pills that cost so much that they can't get them unless they have some sort of government insurance or something like that. Without that government insurance, without their own personal insurance, they couldn't afford that medicine anyway. But the game is, they are so scared to take the chance of looking at something nature has already provided, because they don't want to die, obviously, but they are so indoctrinated to believe that just because this person has a white coat and a degree on the wall means that they know the answer.
Well, a lot of people are threatened. They're actually threatened that this will not work, you know, especially around children. I mean, they're taking children away. If parents say we've determined that this chemo is killing our child, and we want to go for the natural, you know, natural way, a different way, and they're actually, you know, taking these children from the parents, taking the children.
It's a shame, and the only way that this is ever going to stop is whenever we decide to stand up against it. That's the only way it's ever going to stop. I mean, I told, what's that guy's name? He used to come on here all the time. Really awesome guy. He coined the phrase guerrilla charity. When they were talking about people actually getting thrown in jail for feeding the homeless, I said, well, you know, whatever it takes, they dress up in a Batman suit, run by real quick, hand them a sandwich, and run off. You know, it's like, who was that masked man? But even if it took to go out there and pepper the dang side of the road with, you know, vegetable seeds and fruits and stuff like that. Do a Johnny Appleseed when ain't nobody looking. So, you know, you can't walk down the road without finding a tomato plant or, you know, something growing on the side of the road that you can eat. If it took that, I mean, it's doable.
That guy, by the way, who was arrested for feeding the people, I think that was in California, he's passed away.
He was a chef.
Yeah.
He's a professional chef.
Yeah.
I mean, 78 years old.
talk about evil, you know, I mean, talk about evil, arresting someone because they're feeding someone who's starving.
Yeah,
What's going on?
While some rich person is in there having a meal, scraping off half the plate because they didn't want it.
Yep.
That just bothers me so bad when the majority of a lot of food, because of regulations and all that, gets thrown in the dumpster, and actually employees will get fired for taking that home with them, and that's crazy. I mean, if I was a boss, I would say, look, you know, you sign this little paper right here saying that, you know, you're not going to sue me for anything. You can take this food home and give it to your family or whatever it took. Me personally, I wouldn't even care. I'd just give it to them. But the way that the system's set up, they got to make a profit, and they don't want people taking anything for free, even though they're throwing it in the trash.
Let's take this to a personal level too. You know, there's people that will walk by someone in need, you have the people that stand on the side of the road with the sign, "We'll work for food." Da 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 da. You have the homeless people on the streets, sitting there and no food or anything. They don't even have shelter. And the people that walk by, and the people that will say, "Oh, those homeless people, they're doing that on purpose," or the guy with the sign on the corner, "Oh, he's just trying to get your money." The fact that we have people that are hungry, that are homeless, that is not a deficit on them. That is a deficit on the society that allows it to be, and on the person who walks by and boo-hoos that person sitting there. It's not up to you to determine the reasoning that they are where they are at. That's not up to you. The fact that you decide that you will or will not contribute to their benefit, that's on you.
Yeah, and
my father taught me that.
If you give them that money, it don't matter whether they go out and buy dope with it or liquor or whatever. If you give them that money, at the very least, you gave them the option to buy food.
And that's on them. Then it becomes on them what they did with that gift, with that. It's on you when you say no just because I think that they may not really need it. That's on you. That is the part of us that shows the ugliness of who we can be if we choose to. When we decide that we will determine the life of an individual simply by what we see, there for the grace of God go I. That's a truth that we all need to keep in the forefront of our thoughts, I think.
God said, "What you do unto the least of me, you do unto me." And so, you know, hey.
Well, that just is common sense. That's just a heart-filled person, an aware, compassionate person. That's what we're talking about. There's the difference here where people are swept up in this greed and this indoctrination of divided, divide everything, be separate from everyone, and so on. But I have to say there are amazing things that people are doing. You know, talking about the feeding the homeless and so on. But there's a woman, I don't know whether it was in somewhere one of the states here in the U.S., she had realized, as many people do, you know, looking in the dumpsters outside of the stores about the amount of food that's thrown out and so on and so forth. And she started very small, but she put together a group of people, herself and a bunch of people that wanted to make a change, and they started pulling stuff from those stores before it went into the dumpster, you know, and putting stuff together and made a food closet, you know, became a very big, deal where they've got refrigerations and stoves and various other things, and they package up this food and they deliver it to people who need help, to people who need food, rather than putting that food in the trash.
Yep.
You know, she took it into her own hands and started doing this. And that's what I'm saying, that we do have everything that we can participate in to make a change and do something different in the world. If you're concerned and upset and worried about people who are starving, will get out there and do something about it, like this woman did. You know, that's what I'm saying. It's like the same thing with the homeless situation in California. You know, it's unprecedented. Never seen anything like that. You know, it's really very concerning and disturbing, and that should not be. It's one of the wealthiest states here, California. To live there is, you know, you need money to live there. But there are people that don't have that money. Some people that are living on the streets have a job, but they can't afford to live. There's something wrong with that picture.
Yeah, when you got two mother and a father, you know, a family that stayed together, and they're both out working for a living, and they're both finding that at the end of the month they're so short they can't even afford to feed their children. There's a problem with society right there. But the fact that there are people out there doing good things should not be overlooked. I mean, if you really want to look hard enough, you can find good things. It's not just in the people community. Animals do acts of kindness all the time, but very few people ever even recognize half of what goes on. The miracles that are occurring on a regular basis is mind-blowing. You know, it seems like... Go ahead.
That's one thing that brings me to the old, I guess to say, part of the wisdoms of our ancestors is that, you know, originally the animals were our teachers, you know. We learn a lot from the animals, and I think more and more we're seeing these... People are putting up these videos where animals are, yes, doing these acts of kindness to another animal or even to a person. So I look at that from a different perspective. I look at that and I say, well, these are our teachers. Why is this becoming more prevalent where you see these animals that would ordinarily be doing harm to each other actually helping each other?
Yeah.
To me, is a big teaching. That's part of the original, you know, like universal law or creator's law.
You see,
you know,
people risking themselves to save animals as well. There's a lot of wonderful videos out there like that.
I've seen more and more videos. So it tells me something about people. Yeah, it's amazing to see. I've seen so many videos of that. I guess in the bushfires out there in Australia, I saw people actually, you know, getting themselves set up and all geared up and to go out there to try to save little koalas and various other animals that need help, and they're doing it. I mean, there's many that have lost their lives, but they're just dropping. I just had this link. I put it up earlier, but there's an organization here that they're dropping tons. Choppers are used to drop thousands of kilograms of sweet potatoes and carrots for the animals that are starving to death because of the bushfire crisis. You know. I mean, it's called Operation Rock Wallaby. It's a food drop initiative by the NSW government, you know. So, I mean, these things are happening, and unfortunately, these fires never should have happened, as the Aboriginal were saying. It's because the government does not know how to manage the land, and the corporations are basically, you know, corrupting the land, and the government, too, the way they're using the land. And, you know, so there you have that. You have that part. This never should have happened, you know.
No.
Same thing with the fires in California. You know, there's a reason for these things happening. It's mismanagement. It's overuses and various other things that are going on. That these things should not be happening.
But what we need to do is, as a people, you know, as humanity, we need to stop pointing the fingers at everybody else and do what you were saying earlier about getting involved in your communities. Little acts of kindness are a great thing, but imagine what would happen if you got into your neighborhood and you started talking to people, you started talking to your neighbors and you're saying, hey, you know, we got some things we could probably solve around here together. What do you say we get together and do this? You might be surprised how many people would really get on board with that. I've seen it many times. You know, during holidays, they have this program over here where I'm at that my wife's church is involved in. It's where they adopt a family. You know, they'll find a family out there that's having a hard time or something like that. Or maybe not even a family that's actually having a hard time. Just pick a family randomly. They do this, and they'll all come together. They'll cook meals. They'll, you know, buy gifts or whatever for the children, and you know, just try to do something kind for them. I've seen this so many times. When I was doing that harvester thing, man, I'll tell you what, I felt that feeling that I keep trying to explain to everybody, how when people come together, there's an energy that is just, it's overwhelming. I mean, if you used up all the love in your heart and you went into a situation like that, that love would fill right back up so fast it'd make your head spin. It's just incredible. That is the true power, the true energy that we as humans actually have. It's a gift. It is a gift that just keeps on giving. And that's why I say I still have hope. I still believe in the dream. We got a lot of hard-headed people we got to get that point across to. We got a lot of people who's so distracted with the hatred for one another. This ain't Trump's fault. This ain't got nothing to do with Trump. This ain't got nothing to do with the Senate or the Congress or the parliaments being corrupt. This has got to do with the fact that there's a bumper sticker that's been going around out there for years that says slave from birth to grave. These folks have figured out a way to charge you for everything. No matter what you do, no matter what happens to you, even if it ain't your fault, somebody out there figured out a way to make money off of it. And that type of greed right there is the reason why they're still radiating children in the hospital. They got a machine called a hyperbaric oxygen chamber that basically pressurizes that chamber to 5 PSI and puts a lot of oxygen in there. 90% of all the diseases out there are due to oxygen deprivation. It's when something goes wrong and your blood is not getting that oxygen to the parts, the stem cells necessary to rebuild the damaged area. But that process of putting people in that chamber gets that oxygen down into the actual plasma. That's the liquid of the blood, and that plasma can get everywhere. They've seen results where they've cured brain tumors, they've cured stages of gangrene, they've cured cancer with this, and this isn't new technology. Football players, athletes, movie stars, they've been using this for anti-aging, they've been using it for health issues. It's an expensive treatment, and so with that, nobody can afford it. But they do sell home versions of this thing, starting from $3,000 and up, but nobody talks about it. Nobody teaches that kind of stuff. All the things, the benefits of hemp and, hemp seed oil and all the different natural medicines out there, those folks out there who step out of line and start talking about it, we've seen incidents where a whole lot of holistic doctors just suddenly had health issues of their own, to put it kindly. They come up with problems. Just like in the alternative energy community, they came up with problems. Every time somebody tries to go against that system out there, who wants to sell you drugs? You got a list of side effects on this pill that are worse than the actual disease that you're trying to, and they say, oh well, this might not happen, but these are possibilities so that they can cover their own behinds if you get sick from them giving you this pill. Whereas you go look at the alternative medicines, there ain't a list of side effects on like that. There might be one or two. This might cause you to have a little bit of diarrhea or something like that at first, or maybe not. But you see the point. You weigh the pros and the cons. The doctors take a Hippocratic oath not to do harm. And so if these doctors are not telling you, they're not putting all your options on the table. They're saying, not saying, well, here's what we're going to do. This is another alternative. These are the results that, from all the different studies that we've seen done on this, and it goes on down the line. But these are all your options, and they give you an opportunity to choose for yourself the one that's going to be best. Obviously, I'm going to go for the natural before I go for the radiation, because the radiation is just bad. You're busting somebody's immune system down, making them sicker, their hair's falling out, and they're doing this to children. And then,
isn't it common sense, radiation?
Yeah.
Although, common sense, what radiation does to the human being?
It's terrible.
I don't know who came up with this idea. Who came up with that idea? Anyway, think about that. What type of person, a medical person, you know, or even a scientist, a human being, will come up and say, well, let's dose everybody with radiation. Well, either it will cure them or kill them, you know, but I have to say that radiation, if it does, if someone makes it through chemo, if someone makes it through radiation, guess what? Now studies have come out that there will be years down the road that that cancer will come back due to the radiation.
Yeah, it's a mess.
It's not out of your system.
But do you know how much those chemo drugs cost? Look up the prices, folks. It'll blow your doors off. How can you charge so much for a pill? How can you charge so much for a Band-Aid? Look at your doggone medical bill. Listen to all these people talk about why you got to have health insurance. You know, and...
Well, we are questioning this because we can't believe it, but we're talking about greed.
Yeah, that's it.
This greed, okay, and money is the root of all evil.
That's
so
it.
I'm just saying, it's sort of like we're shocked and surprised when we talk like this. How can you do this? What's wrong with people? What's going... I don't believe this and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, there's something else going on here that we keep trying to point out. It's, you know, that it... Yeah, there's something... dark. There's something that is evil. There's something that wants to corrupt what was nature's way, our own healing medicines, our own clean water and clean air, and all this stuff, and the foods and everything, and our children, the coming generations. You know, we've talked about that so many times. I know it's not an easy subject, but it's like, I think we're kind of stunned. But then I have to also address the other side, that there are people that are awakening. We see that every day, and more people, you know, are realizing the system, the corrupt system, and it's worldwide, it's not just here in the United States, the corrupt system, that something's quite wrong, you know, and people are starting to wake up, and there are solutions, and there are answers, and I think people are starting to pull together, and so on and so forth, but again, I have to say, ultimately, and the key piece to me is your own light or your own spirit or your own frequency or the energy, because I have to keep pointing out, I suppose we have to, I don't know, because there's the mystery, the great mysterious is that we are all beings of energies and frequencies, and whatever our energy is or our thoughts and our acts have a frequency, either high or low, damaging or, you know, healing. So we're part of something so amazing and extraordinary, you know, and I think that something has been at work here to really corrupt that sacred knowledge, because I'm going to call it sacred knowledge, you know, the sacred wisdom, right, that is all innate within us, and basically to distract us or remove us or numb us or dumb us down or disconnect us to the miracle of life and also the medicines, the natural way. I mean, people have worked with frequencies to heal cancers, to change things, vibrations, the frequency, because we are beings of energy and frequency. Every organ within us has its own frequency. You know, I mean, I'm not... Scientists are discovering this, and so I'm not just talking through my hat. You know, I'm saying, and they've also discovered that there are, of course, trillions of cells within our body, and they all vibrate with a certain frequency. And that when you think of certain things or what's on your mind or what you focus on, for instance, what you believe in is a frequency. And that affects these trillions of cells within your body. That's why the movement towards body, mind, spirit healing actually takes this into consideration, that what you focus on and what you believe affects you, your health. It connects with your immune system and every cell within your body. It's amazing if you really think about it. Now, the scientific community is starting to, you know, discover this. But in our tradition, in the indigenous way, when they're working with healing, when you have a person who has medicine, for instance, or you could say, well, a shaman or a person who knows this way, it's all about body, mind, spirit. And the Western medicine is different.
You mentioned earlier about the poisoning of the water. Water in itself... You know, it's hydrogen and oxygen. I just mentioned earlier about how 90% of all the diseases out there are due to oxygen deprivation to, you know, vital organs. But water is energy.
It's a living element.
Yeah, and so
it has memory.
It's a miracle, literally. It your body is an electrical, chemical, grand machine. You know, you... when you talk about frequency all the time,
science
already said it is. Anytime you got electricity, there's a wave going on there. It's a frequency wave. It's
like, well, science is catching up because recently scientists put out that they now have discovered that trees have a heartbeat. Ta-da! And now they also discovered that trees communicate with each other. Ta-da! So they're catching up, you know. But talking about the water, for instance, in indigenous culture, well, there are many ceremonies and many connectedness to nature and to how to harmonize nature, for instance. And this is now scientifically proven that words affect the water, okay? Words affect plants. These are studies that have been done for years now, actually. So hurtful, harmful words and even music, okay, actually traumatize a plant. Same thing with water, and these were studies done. So I'm not talking through my hat, but our people knew this. That's why we have ancient ceremonies to how to heal the water, for instance, because these are being revived now. Because what we're talking about are frequencies, and we're talking about certain cadence, tone, and words that hold a frequency to actually create the memory, the original memory of the water that has been corrupted. So it's actually restructuring the water to its original harmonious memory. Well, the water, we are made up of 70-some% of water. So, yeah, studies have been done and proven that if you say, you know, to a child, I hate you or you're stupid, that's a negative energy that affects the life force of that child. It is very damaging and corruptive, not only to their minds, but to the body, and of course their spirit.
So why would anybody in this world want to even corrupt a wonderful life-giving source such as water, you know?
That's a good question.
It's a necessity.
I have to go back to the indoctrination of something very dark and evil because something is against this sacred creation. I have no other answer than that. Okay?
Well,
those that are not human basically are a part of this.
And when it comes to the everyday people like you and me, they don't think about that. You turn the tap on, the water comes out. That's what you think about. When the water doesn't come out, then you want to know why it's not coming out. But you're not worried about what you're pouring down that drain. You're not worried about what's going into the waterways. You don't see it.
Right.
You get into your car, you go, you do your shopping, you come home, you cook dinner. When you go to do your dishes, you either turn on the dishwasher or you turn on your tap. When you go to take a bath or a shower, you turn that on and the water comes out and the water's clean. It's good. There's nothing wrong with that water. You don't think about the unseen. And that's what the problem is. When, before the advent of industry, before the advent of this technology that produces water force and everything, you went to the stream. You saw that stream. You drank from that water, from that stream or that river. You were conscious of what was being done. So you made sure that what you did not contaminate that water.
You were grateful for the water, right, sis? Yes.
We don't have that today. You know? It's easy to overlook what you don't see, especially in a world where convenience is the thing. And your generation has taught you, and that generation before that, that it's just the flip of a switch, the turn of a dial, you know?
Yeah.
We need to be re-educated, I guess.
I think so.
But that's what I'm talking about, is there's this agenda to separate us from nature, right?
So people
are so separated, like you're saying. They don't even think, where is this water coming from?
So you go out and buy bottled water for $1 a piece. Water's the most abundant thing on the earth, and we're going out and buying bottled water from people, and then a lot of us will take the plastic and just either throw it on the ground or maybe in the trash, you know, instead of recycling and reusing things, we're becoming a wasteful society. We buy TVs and we throw them in the trash when they stop working or whatever.
Look, water was a gift to us from this creation here. Water, free flowing, freely ours. The elders said prophecy about someday people will be buying, have to buy water. That is insane.
Yes, it's mind-blowing. It's like, you know, you're paying your carbon tax to breathe. You know, you exhale carbon, CO2, you exhale it, you know. It's part of nature. It's what feeds the plants. And they want to charge you for that luxury. They want to charge you for the water. They want to charge you for what should have been natural medicine that all turned out to be synthetic. And because of the way that it wasn't natural, it causes you more problems. How many people listening in on this radio show have an elderly person in their family who, when you sit around the dinner table, has a whole big giant tray of medicines? This medicine to counteract that medicine, to counteract that medicine, and so on down the line. And then somewhere in that big pile, they might have some natural supplements or something like that. How many folks out there actually see this on a daily basis?
Well, this is not even for elderly people. This is for children today.
Oh, I know. I know.
Children have bottles. You know, parents have taken their kids because the school tells them your kid is disruptive in class. They need to go see a psychotherapist, and the psychotherapist whips out their prescription thing and writes a prescription immediately. So here, take this. There's no question about what your family like, what foods are you eating, what's going on, you know. There's no questions about that. So these kids are winding up taking all these medications, these pharmaceuticals, because, well, they take the first one and then they have side effects and the parent takes them. And I saw a documentary on this, that's why I'm talking like this, that the parent doesn't know what to do, so they take the kid back to the psychotherapist, and the psychotherapist, well, here, write another script. Well, here, this will take care of that. So now the kid has two bottles every day they got to take. Well, then there's side effects of the other. It becomes a nightmare.
Yeah, and when the whole system collapses and they don't have access to that anymore, imagine the nightmare that those poor kids are going to go through when they don't have what their body now thinks it needs. It's crazy.
Well, the doctors never say, can you give me the type of food, or let me, what is your household? What's your food? What are you eating? Because I saw it in this documentary where this parent, this was a story about many kids, but particularly this young boy, 8 years old, he had about five or six bottles lined up every day of medications that he had to take. But while he's sitting there in the kitchen and his mother's talking to the camera, guess what that kid is eating? She's feeding him out of a microwave these corn dogs. And on the table is this huge, huge bottle of Gatorade. It was purple, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, so this is what, and I'm not blaming the mother. What I'm saying is that people aren't aware. They're not told this is what either they can afford or this is what's available to them, and this is what they're feeding their children.
The crazy,
you know,
thing is we have the option, but we've become so complacent because of the convenience of being able to just go to the, you know, fast food place or down the snack aisle. And
yeah,
you know, a lot of these things are designed to literally taste so good that you can't just eat one. You know, that's the slogan or whatever. But, you know, we got to finally realize we got the solutions necessary to fix this. We're going to have to start working our way up out of here. But, you know, the point is this. If we got all these solutions and we have the technologies like we're experiencing right now, this is amazing technology, this internet, where we can talk clear across the world to each other and share information, and we got all these resources available to us, then why are we in this predicament? It's because of the greed. Money is not going to be able to fix this. I hate to say that. It doesn't matter how good your economy is. The economy is good for you whenever you can feed your family, but it's better for those out there who are running the banking system and the industries out there, because they're making a lot of money, and because they can say it's scarce, they can sell it to you for more. They throw a label on crude oil, something that's natural. They call it fossil fuel, which makes it sound like there can't be very much of it. And that every 20 years, they'll tell you, we only got 20 years left of it. You know, we got to dig for more. They're cracking up the ground. They're taking the hydraulic pressure out of the earth. They're having sinkholes pop up all over the place. They're blaming it on an act of God, the same God that their science says doesn't exist. And so on down the line, it's an act of God, so I don't have to pay yet. You know, check the insurance company. Check your insurance policy. See if there's an act of God clause in there. It'll surprise you. All right? But nonetheless, putting God and everything all else aside, we got all these tools. We got each other. We got the numbers. We outnumber the elitists by the hundreds of thousands, if not millions. There ain't very many of them. There's a small percentage, but yet we're allowing this small percentage to run amok, to get us into wars, to send our children into wars, to do all these things while sitting there showing us on TV all their propaganda, their lies, and telling us that, oh, there's children in the world starving. Send your money to this charity. Send your money to... And then 54 years later, you're still seeing the same commercial. The track record stinks. The track record of the system stinks. And
I have to say that the track record of the political system is a major stink because nothing has gotten better.
No.
Like you're talking about.
Same old problems.
And all the promises, it's all a circus. Like we're seeing the circus playing out full force today in the political system, in the political arena. It's all a circus, and people are standing up on this side of the aisle and that side of the aisle and screaming at each other and blaming this politician and that politician and blaming each other for voting for that politician. It's such a joke. It's amazing to me, you know, how people really believe in this system and all these politicians who get up there for money, greed, promise this and promise that.
I'm going to bring peace to the Middle East after this little war over here. This is going to be the war to end all wars. We've heard that. We've heard that over and over and over again. And how many of you have a relative who is a veteran who come back with either their leg missing or their mind or their spirit broken? How many of you have had to see that? What happened to the war to end all wars? Why are we still doing it? That's the biggest question of all. And why we can't get people together is because you have a lot of people that are buying into the propaganda that the system is perpetrating. When you hear people saying, oh, Trump did this and Trump did that and he's a bad guy, you know, all this crazy stuff. Trump is just one man. You're millions, if not billions of people. They tell you that you're overpopulated. They tell you that if we do a good job with vaccines, we can solve the population problem. What? Are you not paying attention to the words that are coming out their mouth? Words have meaning. I can't tell you how many times somebody has stood me down and corrected my language because the words that I say didn't match what they believed. They didn't think that I was saying it right, so I had to rephrase myself. I had to be cautious of what I talk about because if I didn't, you know, my words could be perceived as something completely opposite than the message that I was trying to
pass. Well, you would offend someone.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid you offend someone. People are getting offended. So you offended me. You hurt my feelings, you know. You disrespected me. You offended me. You hurt my feelings. Everybody's so, like, ready to point fingers and ready to complain. And we see this insanity that we're dealing with, but I still have to say there are others that are waking up, and there are amazing solutions and amazing possibilities that we have before us. And we know that we have abilities and a power that is unimaginable, and they know that if we come together, we'll win. They know that we will change things if we come together. So that's why they divide us. That's why there's a political system that divides us. You sign up for this political party, and there you are. You're glued to it. You're chained to it. You don't even look at a possibility from another perspective. So, you know, I'm just saying, this is the system we're living in now, and for me, I say, you know, I still have this very deep connectedness to something far greater that's my foundation. It's this spiritual connection, you know. And I, and of course, you know, I have this experienced many miracles, and I believe miracles can happen, and I know other people have experienced many miracles. They do exist, and we are part of that miracle, every one of us.
Yep.
So that's what I'm saying. I don't feel it's hopeless, and I don't think we're helpless. They want us to feel that it's hopeless. They want us to believe that we're helpless. I'm not. You're not.
Well, I'll tell you what, today's been a pretty uplifting show. I'm really glad we got the opportunity to do this. But it's time
it's
to go.
It's so good to have you back.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I tell you, I was so concerned that, you know, I wasn't going to be able to get these messages out to people. But I listened to the show that you and Patty and your guest did. And I tell you what, I was so happy. I was so proud and so amazed and just blessed that you were there. Folks, if you haven't heard that show, it's listed on the podcast pages, The Nights with Barbara and Patty. They did a wonderful
job. Well, you're
job.
A hard act to follow. I have to say.
We were honored that you actually asked us to actually step in for you. I'm glad that we did a good job for you.
Oh, you did amazing. I'll tell you what. I could rest assured knowing that if I wasn't ever around and you two had the show on your own, that it would just keep on doing what we've been doing. This is a good thing.
That's not going to happen, so.
Yeah, this is a good
that's
thing.
Right. We don't want you going nowhere.
No, I'm part of the dream team. I got to stick around. But really, we got to go around the table and give everybody a chance. Which one of you wonderful ladies want to go first?
Go ahead, sis.
Well, I just want to say that I'll reiterate that it's not the same without you, Shazuz, and it is an honor to be here every Sunday because, you know, the main thing is you bring the heart, and that, to me, is the best food for my spirit. I get well-fed every Sunday, and you're part of that, and you're the big part of that, so... You know, I'm glad that you had a couple of weeks off, but hey, I'm just saying.
Don't make it a habit.
I don't know. I'm in it that's for the long right. haul now. You don't have to worry about that happening for a long time.
Well, okay, for me, it's a privilege and an honor, actually, to be part of People for People and double that, yes. Being on your show and being a guest here on your show. And yeah. People for People is so really amazing and Gaz has worked very hard, you know, to keep this station up, to keep the station going. It's a beautiful thing, very powerful.
We just had 2 years, 2 year anniversary.
Yeah, could you believe it? Amazing, right? And we're not done yet, so.
No, just getting started.
And so I just want to say to everybody out there, you know, yeah, there's so many good shows, you know, podcasts and whatever. You can get uplifted here. You can find out all kinds of information. And Shaz is always right there and his science shows on Saturday. I mean, it's just awesome what you do. So I just want to thank you. And also thank everybody for being here with us today. I appreciate it so much. Lots of love to you guys.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and I want to say, give a shout out to Barry. Barry's feeling under the weather, but he did stick around. And we love you, Barry. Get better.
Yes, we do. So, folks, I tell you what, this show is going up on the Idol DJ so more people can get a good message. We need more messages like this. We don't try to bring disparaging or discouraging messages to you. We try to talk about things. We put solutions on the table. But today was kind of a special show. I love it when this happens. It's not planned. We don't script this stuff. It just comes straight from the heart. It comes from those comments that you put in the chat room. It comes from all the different stories about the pay it forwards and the kind acts and stuff like that. I'm asking each and every one of you, don't even have to necessarily plan a day. Just take the time out of your life to go out there and smile on somebody and do something kind. And if this message inspired you even remotely, please share it with somebody. That's all we ask. Bring somebody here to visit with us and send them over there to visit with People for People Radio Network. Folks, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Love each and every one of you. Thank you for blessing me with your presence and allowing me the opportunity to spend this time with you and Patty and Barbara and everybody in the chat room. This is what it's all about. This is how we fix it. Money's not going to fix this world. we, the people, are going to fix this world. And I believe it's starting. I believe the ripples. I believe the waves. I believe the energy. I still believe in the dream. And so with that said, we're going to see you next time. Hopefully, Sunday, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central for the Knights of the Round Table. And 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central for the Mad Science Show. Don't miss either one, because they both got something good to share with you. Take care, everybody.
What is the dream? The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us, from every nation, come together and make that future a great
old
one.
Woman!
Man!
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how do you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would realize... Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What? I told you. We're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor,
Just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance when we're able. We do routines to call the scenes, to footwork in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsing-able. We're rock and mad in Camelot. We sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right. Hear ye, King Shaziz the Terrible. Always working Shaziz the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.